was just worried that would make a unique history of starting a meeting with only two members of parliament. I'm a bit anxious that our numbers are dwindling. We're getting outnumbered by the department. However, given that the budget review process has got deadlines, we just have to forge ahead. Just as other members are not around, the process has got to proceed. Like next week, I will not be around for quite a number of days, but the process will proceed. Today we are going to get a presentation from the department on its annual report. And the presentation is in the context of the current practice or the paradigm shift of budget review. Unlike before, where the report would be one-sided, financial report would be on the other side. But also it's an integral part of a multi-phase process which goes throughout the whole financial year. We've had inputs before, and I'd just like to alert the department that our receipt of this presentation is in the context of the other inputs from the Financial and Fiscal Commission, from the Auditor General's office, and from the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. And those are the kind of practices that were not necessarily there before, but we are integrating them now as part of our oversight work when we consider the annual performance. And as well as obviously from next year, the annual plan of the department. It is in that context that now we'll be handling the overall assessment of the department's activities. The same will go with the statehood enterprises or the entities that fall under the department. I suppose when it comes to entities such as ESCOM, we will work jointly with the relevant portfolio committees. Obviously, the Portfolio Committee for Public Enterprise on ESCOM to see how we collaborate in that. There could be one or two others, but ESCOM comes in mind. Without further ado, let me hand over to the department to just before we head over to the department, we need to get apologies, obviously, where we stand on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've received the following apologies. Honourable Mungoto, Honourable Khadebe, Honourable Tinto, Honourable Lucas, and Honourable Selauche. Those are the apologies that we've received.
Okay, thank you very much. Mrs. Nelly, I'm sure now time has come for you and your team to take us through your presentation. Sevok.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. If I can also add another apology from the Minister who could not be here because of prior engagements. Thank you very much, Chairperson. First, let me introduce the team.
But just on that, I think as a matter of practice, in future, We need to try our level best to make sure that we clear our diaries for the budget review process. I know I'm guilty even for next week, but it's something that it's so difficult to wriggle out of. Unless it's really something that's extremely, extremely difficult for us to wriggle out of, because the budget review process is fundamental, not just important, but it's fundamental. I'm sure as we look at the report that will come out of this one report, we'll even appreciate that more and more. I'm aware that last year it was the debut. Even ourselves, we are running helter-skelter as portfolio committees, not clear how to handle this emerging animal. But as part of process, as a team, whilst we may be conducting oversight, I just want to alert everyone, those who are here and those who are not here, so that it be on record. We need to try our best to give time and space for the budget review process around October every year. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, let me just introduce the team, starting with Mr. Makubela, the DDG responsible for hydrocarbons and energy planning, and Mr. Mguni, who is the DDG responsible for corporate services, and Mrs. Zungu, who is the DDG responsible for, who is the chief operating officer, Mr. Ombi Apane, who is the acting DDG for electricity, nuclear and clean energy, and on my right hand side, the DDG who is responsible for chief financial officer's office. And of course, I've got quite a number of colleagues that are supporting us, and they will introduce themselves as and when you need to introduce them. Chairperson, if we can just go to the presentation, and just to also indicate the context of our presentation today. Chairperson, you will recall that the President Jacob Zuma, in his 2011 State of the Nation address, he reiterated that energy security is critical for economic development and job creation. He also reiterated that energy is a fundamental aspect of human existence. It is the principal means for providing access to basic needs such as food and water, and it facilitates various opportunities for the achievement of a decent quality of life. And he also indicated around the issues of energy that access to affordable, safe and modern energy services is therefore a prerequisite for sustainable development and for achieving the Millennium Development Goals. So, Chairperson, in our presentation, you will notice that we attempt to align ourselves with all those ideals that were espoused by the President in his State of the Nation address. Now, in terms of the mandate of the department, Chairperson, you'll recall that we said in our strat plan that we need to ensure secure and sustainable provision of energy for socio-economic development, and our mission is to regulate and transform the sector for the provision of secure, sustainable and affordable energy. And we intend doing that by making sure that we exercise oversight on the implementation of the overall energy policy and to ensure access to affordable and reliable energy by all South Africans, as well as promote environmentally friendly energy carriers. So, Chairperson, let me just go straight to our strategic objectives. Now, in terms of our strategic objectives, Chair, that we also outlined in our strategic plan, we said that we are going to ensure that there is energy security, and we are going to create and maintain a balance between the energy supply and demand, and we'll also develop strategic partnership, specifically international strategic partnership, and ensure reliable delivery and logistics of energy. We also said that we are going to achieve universal access and transform the energy sector. So in other words, we are going to diversify the energy mix, we are going to improve access, we are going to provide quality and affordable energy, and we are going to promote safe use and transform the energy sector. We also said we're going to regulate the sector, and by ensuring that we develop legislation that is going to encourage investment and ensure compliance. And we also said that we are going to ensure effective and efficient service delivery by trying to understand what do our stakeholders need, and make sure that we improve our turnaround times. And we said we are going to ensure optimization and utilization of energy resources, and working by developing the enabling policies. And also we are going to ensure sustainable development, promote clean energy alternatives, and economic development and promote job creation. But all this, we will have to make sure that we do it by creating a different culture, a culture that is going to ensure that we are able to deliver sustainable energy to everybody in South Africa. Now, in terms of the issues of the interim structure, Chairperson, it's already a well, or rather a documented fact that the department didn't have adequate resources to ensure that all those objectives are achieved. And a year later, Chairperson, I can indicate that the structure is still not fully implemented due to funding challenges. So, Chair, the structure that was implemented as from the 1st of April 2010 is that of Minister. Chair, we'll recall that we only were joined by the Deputy Minister in November 2010. So it was then the Director General, and with five branches, which include only two line function branches, which is electricity, nuclear and clean energy, hydrocarbons and energy planning, and then three branches that provide the support to the department. So, Chair, if I can just indicate what goes into this, just as a way of keeping up. On the Program 1 administration, Chair, that's where we have all of our support services. So they basically, they include the ministry and also the corporate services, Office of the CFO and the Office of the COO. And the program 2, which is hydrocarbons and energy planning, is responsible for the development of policy and regulations to manage petroleum, coal and natural gas industry. And the petroleum controller, who is responsible for the implementation of the Petroleum Products Amendment Act of 2003. And then, of course, the energy planning, which includes, among others, integrated energy plan. And program 3 is electricity, nuclear, and clean energy. And Chair, in this one in particular, it's electricity, where they are responsible for the development of policies and programs that pertains to electricity. And in there, we also have what we call an integrated national electricity planning business unit, which manages the electrification planning, funding and implementation. That is where also the non-grid programs are also residing. And then we have got a nuclear energy chief directorate that is responsible for improving the governance of the nuclear sector, specifically in relation to the nuclear safety on non-proliferation and nuclear technology. And then we've got a branch that is quite important at the moment, the clean energy branch, that facilitates the implementation of renewable energy, energy efficiency technology, and promoting regulations for CDM, and making sure that CDM projects are approved for forward movement towards the designated national authority. And then program 4, it's associated services. This is where all the state-owned entities that report to the Minister of Energy are residing. That will include, amongst others, Central Energy Fund, the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, NEXA, which is National Energy Corporation of South Africa, and also formerly the EDI holdings. Chairperson, the approved full structure is indicated in front of you, which indicates that if we were to be able to have adequate funding, we'd be having energy policy and planning as a branch, clean energy, nuclear as a branch, energy programs and projects, that's where all the programs like the electrification will fall under, and then of course the rest will be the support services that will include the CFO's office, governance and compliance and corporate services. Chairperson, as we speak right now, we indicated that we started by operating about 41% of this approved structure, and by the end of the financial year, which was 31st of March 2011, this had only increased to about 52%. Majority of funded posts were transferred from the DME and did not address most of the critical post requirements, and most senior positions in support services were filled by year end. One critical resignation, chairperson, was the acting CFO at the time, who actually resigned at the end of February, which created quite challenges for the department. And then on average, the vacancy rate for the past year was on the approved interim structure was around 10.6%, which we have reduced now to about 7%. Okay. We ensured that vacant positions were filled within a period of 4 months. Employment equity figures, as we speak, is we have got about 93% of the historically disadvantaged individuals, while women in the department constitute about 54%. And due to inadequate funding, not all training gaps could be addressed during the year. In terms of the organizational environment, the following structures were established during the year under review. Internal audit committee that is led by Professor Gordon, strategy and risk management, monitoring and evaluation, procurement committee, and committees related to HR. We are currently sharing the accommodation with the Department of Mineral Resources at the Travena campus in Pretoria and regional offices. Chair, if I can just outline some of the challenges that we have had in our first year as a department. Now, I'm going to address both the external environment and internal environment. The external environment, basically, you'll recall, Chair, that the country was recovering from the 2008-09 economic meltdown, and effectively that had impact on our planning regimes. We had an urgent need to integrate all the plans that we have to address security of energy supply. And there was a lack of significant investment in the energy sector during the year under review. And we had and we continue to have serious challenges in the electricity distribution industry, which has got a great impact on ensuring that we have adequate supply. Because even if, say, Eskom were to be able to have their Medupi and Kusile on time, if the electricity distribution industry is not properly managed, that could pose a challenge. We also have the urgent need to respond to climate change and global warming in an integrated manner, and there were regulatory uncertainty and price volatility in the liquid fuels industry, and also there were capacity challenges in the manufacturing and distribution in the liquid fuel sector. So we faced with those challenges, Chairperson. How did we fare with regards to what we're supposed to do? So we start by addressing the issues of outcomes-based performance, which are made to understand that the Department of Performance and Monitoring and Evaluation was able to provide feedback on this past Wednesday. Our contribution as an energy sector, we believe that it cut across all the outcomes. But what we are going to do in this presentation, we're just going to highlight where we have made contribution in terms of the 12 outcomes. Outcome 2 refers to a long and healthy life for all South Africans. Our contribution in this regard has been the electrification of clinics and health centers through the National Electrification Program. and also the introduction of more affordable and cleaner sources of energy through regulations. In particular, here we're talking about LPG for household and heating and cooking. And as members were aware, we came to present those regulations here in Parliament. On the outcome 4, which refers to decent employment through inclusive economic growth, we believe that our contribution here is to ensuring that there is energy supply for economic growth and job creation. So we have done this through ensuring that we have adequate plans, we've made sure that we are implementing those plans that we have in place. We completed in the year under the review the integrated resource plan, of which we are in the process now of implementing. And we are of the view that some of the projects that are going to be done are going to provide the much-needed job creation. Outcome 6, that is an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network. Our contribution here is to ensure reliable generation, distribution, and transmission of electricity, address the backlog challenges concerning the maintenance of the electricity distribution infrastructure, and to assist in the building of the NMPP, which is the pipeline between Durban and Johannesburg, to ensure that there is a reliable source of liquid fuels from the coast to inland. And on the outcome 8, our contribution is a sustainable settlement and improved quality of life. Here our contribution is mainly electrification of household and small businesses and the job opportunities that are presented through the electrification program. On outcome 10, environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continuously enhanced, we are of the view that it is our responsibility as the energy sector, we're told we're contributing at least about 60% of greenhouse gas emissions, to ensure that we reduce those effectively through appropriate plans and also through certain interventions like energy efficiency to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, in terms of the Millennium Development Goals, we believe, again, that energy is cross-cutting through all those goals. However, we're going to concentrate on Millennium Development Goal number 1, on eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. In this particular case, we believe that energy is going to be quite key in ensuring that this goal is achieved. So that's hence, therefore, our aggressive implementation of electrification and energy diversification, and to try and make sure that there is affordable energy. And to promote gender and equality and empower women, we believe that by making sure that we mainstream all the gender policies in the department, and also support women empowerment initiatives, and introduction of clean energy and enhancement of women participation in the sector, and ensure environmental sustainability, that is Millennium Development Goal number 7, we believe that by introduction of clean and renewable energy, we are going to ensure that we protect our environment. Develop global partnerships for development, our international cooperations and collaborations at multilateral, bilateral, and trilateral levels on energy issues is our contribution to ensure that we influence the energy space, both locally and internationally. So in terms of, if I can just summarize then, Chairperson, our performance against predetermined objectives and key focus areas. On ensuring energy security, we completed the Integrated Resource Plan, IRP 2010 to 2030. We also have started the process of developing the Integrated Energy Plan. The relevant branches, Chair, are going to detail progress in this regard. On the new multi-product pipeline from Durban to Johannesburg, we have experienced some of the challenges in this regard. The branch is going to elaborate further in this regard. On the Integrated National Electrification Program, we are of the view that we have achieved our targets. In fact, we have exceeded our targets in this regard. And with regards to the alleviating the pressure of energy prices to the poor, like on electricity, through the use of the inclining block tariffs. We believe that some of this work has been implemented, but Chairperson is not without its challenges. We are going to elaborate on this one further. We have installed some of the solar water heaters, and we believe that this program is quite important as part of trying to reduce our energy footprint. And also the audit of the liquid fuels charter was also completed during the year under review. And also we launched the 7th Integrated Energy Center in Kuno. In terms of regulating the energy sector, we regulated the LPG supply to residential areas. We published the roadmap for clean fuels. We tabled the ISMO bill in cabinet, and that was approved during the year under review. And we also promulgated the new generation capacity regulation that was meant to enable IPPs into the energy sector in South Africa. And then in terms of effective and efficient service delivery, we also improved our turnaround time for petroleum licensing and cleared the backlogs. And also we had various national and international stakeholder engagements. And also we have improved quite significantly the turnaround time for filling the vacancies. In terms of optimal utilization of energy resources, we also indicate the kind of policies that we also finalize on the year under the review. On ensuring sustainable development, we initiated a solar park concept, and we held a successful solar park international investors conference in Upington. We institutionalized the South African National Energy Development Institute. And we also made sure this current year that in our program we maximize job creation opportunities on the integrated national electrification program. And in terms of the department, on enhancing our culture, systems, and people, we awarded about 26 of the bursaries to employees, and a total of about 55 graduates participated in the department's internship program. And in terms of corporate governance, we established those various structures that I have already referred to. So, Chairperson, that is just an overview of what we approved in the previous financial year. And from now, Chairperson, I'll request the program managers to present their achievements during this financial year and the challenges that they encountered, starting with the Office of the COO.
Thank you. Thank you, Tichi. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Just briefly on the Office of the COO, this is the office that is responsible for strategy and risk management, monitoring and evaluation, state-owned entities oversight, including the international relations. I think as a start, the Office of the COO is a new section that was introduced during the year. We did not have it in our previous structures. And it's one of those branches that started with about 10% capacity, which provided initial challenges in terms of implementing what we needed to implement at that stage. But the unit has been able over the past year to jointly with DMR produce and table the last Department of Minerals and Energy's annual report on time. That was tabled in Parliament and presented to the parliamentary committees. We managed to hold the first Department of Energy strategic planning session in November 2010, where we were successful in implementing the new outcome-based planning approach, which we introduced a year before most of the departments, and that one is in implementation as we speak. The department's 2011-12 MTEF five-year plan was tabled in February this year, and later presented to this portfolio committee and the Select Committee on Economic Development. Together with the Internal Audit Department, we managed to establish all the relevant and critical governance structures within the department. Some of most of which the director has already alluded to. Challenges in that area, of course, because of capacity challenges, we did have some delays, especially in the risk, in the strategy and risk management function. Because when we started the year, we had no capacity at all in that area. We had to borrow people from the other sections in the department, which means we had to actually prioritize our plans in terms of making sure that at the end of the year, there is some element of work that has been done in terms of providing the department strategy plan. But on the risk management function area, we didn't do much work in that area because of we did not even have a single individual available. We have during the year been able to provide oversight of state-owned entities reporting to the minister. The DG has indicated those, we've got 5 of them at the moment. Our work has been on focusing on alignment of the strategy between the department strategy, being a new department in inverted commas, our strategy going forward, also the monitoring of the quarterly performance that the SOEs present to the minister. We're also ensuring that the capacity of the board, as appointed by the minister, is appropriate. Also, in the area of our SOEs, as members would remember, that in December last year, it was cabinet took a decision to actually terminate the operations of the EDIH. We were responsible for making sure that the winding up process is done accordingly. Appointment of an administrator, and as well as our work with the board. As it stands now on the issue of EDIH, we have almost concluded the winding up process. We've got 2 or 3 areas that still need attention: the area of the CCMA process with the employees, the area of other pending litigations from some of our creditors who believe that the decision to actually stop the operations of EDIH had cost them income. So that one is still under debate. As soon as those are concluded, hopefully by the end of November this year, we should be able to deregister EDIH as an entity. I think during the year under review, honorable members, just to mention on the transfers to our SOEs, although the CFO will give details on that, those are the figures of the transfers that were made during the year to Saneri, to EDIH. As noted, EDIH after 2010-11, there could be a significant decrease in terms of how much was transferred there because of the winding down process. And then with our transfers to Nexa, which has grown, and then NNR, which has decreased. There has been a significant decrease in the funding of most of our SOEs, especially in NNR, in terms of what they've been getting from National Treasury, which has provided some challenges. And I'm sure that when they come and produce their annual report, they will give this committee some detailed information on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll proceed with, sub-program, corporate services. As the designation indicates, we provide a corporate support service to the department in the area of human resource management and auxiliary services. We also provide a communication and knowledge management service to the department, and we also provide legal services to both the ministry and the department. Through the HR function, the department's average vacancy rate for the past year was 10.6%, which is well within the prescribed norm of 10 to 12%. Chairperson, I must indicate that, of late, the vacancy rate is, around 7.2%. The first, Chairperson, as the DG has indicated, that there was an approved structure of the department. The structure that was approved by the minister and concurred therewith by DPSA. But because of lack of funding, we had to come up with creative ways of ensuring that there is service delivery in the department, and we came up with, the implementation of the interim structure, which was really making provision for the critical positions to enable the department to take off from the 1st of April. And additional to those pools that existed, you know, which were transfers from the old DME, we identified 95 critical additional pools, and these were filled within a period of 4 months, which is really, Chairperson, an achievement. In terms of employment equity, a black representation as at the end of the financial year stood at 93% of the total staff complement, and women represented 44% of the total employees. Chair, I must also indicate that the total staff complement of the department, you know, 65% thereof is employees below the age of 35, which then implies that we have to embark on a radical training program, and through our, you know, human resource development analysis, we've identified, you know, a number of critical training interventions, and we've managed to train 262 employees, and in the following areas: that is, advanced management development program, financial management for non-financial managers, excellent customer service for frontline staff, job evaluation, core and job descriptions, anti-fraud and corruption, leadership and management development program, human resource management, personal training, computer training within the area of Microsoft Excel, Word, PowerPoint, and others, and as well as basic accounting systems referred to as BAS, as well as a departmental induction program and public service induction and orientation program. 39 employees, Chairperson, as I have indicated, that there is a need in this area. 39 serving employees were awarded internal bursaries, and unfortunately, only 26 employees accepted these bursaries. Those that have turned the offers down was, of course, because of, you know, workload. And we have also embarked on an internship program where we've brought in, 55 unemployed graduates. And we've also awarded, you know, an opportunity to 12 students, you know, to participate in this internship programs. And we have earmarked specifically those areas that are relevant to the business of the department within civil, chemical, and mechanical engineering fields. The Chief Director of Communication, together with the Government Communication and Information Systems, did develop and implement the Energy Efficiency Awareness Campaign and a number of radio dramas, TV series, that is on ETV and other SABC channels, as well as billboards and newspaper adverts were also done. Chairperson, in line with the cabinet decision, 10 public participation programs were successfully conducted during the year under review, and the department has partnered with, you know, our SOEs such as NERSA, NNR, Petro SA, EDI, H, and NEXA, as well as ESCOM, on these public participation programs. These public participation programs have proven to be a successful, you know, platform where we, you know, had an opportunity of engaging civil societies across all government spheres. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to be presenting Program 2, which is hydrocarbons and energy planning. If we go quickly to slide 33, the DG has gone through the purpose of the program. But I think it's important to just highlight at a really lower level exactly what this entails. Basically, this chairperson entails, amongst others, processing of licenses. And here I can indicate that it's licenses to over 5,000 entities as well as sites and retail sites in the country. It's also processing licenses to wholesalers as well as processing licenses to manufacturers of petroleum products in the country. To this end, I also need to just indicate that some of the service stations, they basically change hands a couple of times in a year. So even though you would have in the country about 4,900, around that figure, of retail sites, these change hands, some of them twice a year, and then each of those has got to be processed by the branch. Secondly, we also have to coordinate a supply of liquid fuels in the country in a constrained environment. I'm just explaining slide 33 in a more exactly what we do in the office. And that coordination basically of liquid supply in a constrained environment is not well appreciated. It involves, amongst others, basically stopping everything that you are doing for about 2 to 3 days to ensure that actually there is reliable supply in the country, because the constrained environment in which we operate, you would find that if one or two of the refineries go down, then the product may not reach inland, there may be shortages in some parts of the country, and you basically then have to stop everything and focus on making sure that there is adequate supply. I think people would have experienced the shortages, amongst others, with LPG, which was really caused by the issue of lack of supply. The third element that is related to energy planning involves basically developing the country's energy plan, and which would have to take into account plans of other sectors. So the development of the IEP, amongst others, is dependent on what the transport department is going to do in terms of the 50-year plan on transport. Because we can have a plan and then find that, an energy plan, only to find that transport has moved everybody to rail, which would then actually mean that you've planned for increasing capacity in other areas, only to find that that capacity will be stranded. So it's important that we take this into account. Then, Chairperson, if we move on to the objective that we have set ourselves with this in mind, through the year, we basically had set ourselves a target of developing an integrated energy planning strategy, which would inform how we would go about developing the IEP. And this was set for September 2010. And Chairperson, I think I need to indicate here that even though we did not make the date of September 2010, we basically did present the integrated energy planning strategy to cabinet during the year under review. And I will talk about what then counsel that we received from cabinet a bit later. We also had set ourselves a target of developing a national strategic fuel stocks policy, which, amongst others, would respond to some of the infrastructure constraints that we are facing, partly due to the reliability of some of the refineries that we have in the country, but also to respond to shocks, political shocks, geopolitical shocks, which would impact on the supply of crude oil as well as petroleum products to the country. The other objective that we had set ourselves was, and I will talk to the outcomes as I proceed. And then we also had to provide oversight over the construction of the NMPP, the new multi-purpose petroleum pipeline. And then we also were supposed to establish Sanedi by March 2011, which is an organization which, amongst others, would drive energy efficiency in the country, as well as conduct research and development into energy-related technologies. If I can move on, we also were going to strengthen the regulatory framework, because industry had been indicating to us that we need a more predictive environment, predictable environment for regulation. And with the regulatory accounts, basically, the aim there was to basically reward the investments in the particular sectors where the investments were made. And in order to do that, you need a set of regulatory accounts, and that set of regulatory accounts is what we had then set ourselves to develop by March 2011. We also had set ourselves a target of making sure that we fall within the law in terms of processing licenses that I referred to for retail manufacturing as well as wholesale within the 90-day period, as well as facilitate the participation of HDSAs, historically disadvantaged South Africans in the petroleum sector by licensing, basically ensuring that in what we license, 25% of all, or 25% of the ownership basically is with historically disadvantaged individuals. If I can just go, Chairperson, to the progress, we've broken it down to progress achieved, progress partially achieved, as well as those that were not achieved at all. As the DG has indicated, we did publish the regulations for regulating LPG at retail level. However, during the year, we also had a task that we were given to produce an LPG strategy, which will basically guide the development of LPG in the country as an alternative energy source. Now, in terms of that, that draft has been completed internally, was completed, and we intend taking it to cabinet. In terms of clean fuels, I think the DG indicated there that we published the roadmap, which was a discussion document on fuel specifications and standards. That one was published on the date that is indicated there for comment. And we are in the process now of actually evaluating those comments. I must say that this is a massive undertaking, Clean Fuels 2, because what it does, it will result, one, in the need to basically reinvest in infrastructure by the oil companies, the manufacturers, investing in infrastructure for producing cleaner fuels, because currently none of the refineries in the country can basically meet all the requirements of clean fuels to going forward. Now the plan there is that we then start having the clean fuels in the country in 2013, as well as then prohibit the manufacturing of anything that is falls outside the regulations by 2017. Chairperson, SANEDI was also established during the year. This basically involved the development of a business case, as well as making sure that the organization is listed as an entity by the Minister of Finance, and this was duly done. And so SANEDI now is established as an entity. However, I must indicate here that SANEDI is going to require funding, but of course that's a matter that is being dealt with at another level. Also, on the issue of, if we go on to the next slide, we make progress on infrastructure database, a report which we produced internally, which also contained maps as well as improvements on energy statistics database internally. I think some of these reports have been circulated. It includes the energy synopsis document, which was also published during the year under review. On the issue of energy planning, we have made some progress, as I indicated. We contracted CSIR to develop the modeling system for the IEP. So in as far as the IEP is concerned, it is work in progress. We did not complete the IEP as we had intended. And here partly it's because of the complexity of the task. I believe that we underestimated the task when basically we set ourselves the objective. Underestimated the task, but also we were very optimistic in as far as the level of skills that we would be getting, because we had thought that during the year we would make sure that energy planning policy branch is capacitated, and of course that did not materialize because there was no money for that. The other constraint on the IEP was the availability of data, and again here this is an area which we have subsequently had to ask the CSIR to assist with. On the strategic stocks policy, this was developed internally and went through the internal review process. We then felt it necessary that we should consult with the National Treasury, because this was going to have an impact on the petroleum price, what we were proposing in the National Strategic Stocks Policy. And of course, whatever has an impact on the petrol price or fuel prices basically has an impact on the economy. So we had to consult with them. The process, I must indicate, did take longer than we had expected. So we basically have moved this into this current financial year, the strategic stocks policy, and we intend going to cabinet in the near future on it. The next slide talks to what I have referred to briefly, but I think I need to just indicate that on the integrated energy planning strategy, we took the IEP strategy to cabinet in February 2011. And we were given what I would refer to as wise counsel by cabinet on how to proceed with the integrated energy planning strategy. Basically, if I can just indicate that the major issue was what I had referred to, that we need to take into account all the other plans of other key sectors such as transport as we develop the planning strategy. The other issue was around the issue of technologies we need to then be looking forward into the technologies that we foresee for the various energy applications going forward. And we were then asked to do more internal consultation within government, and then go out and start consulting on something which has taken into account all these other inputs, and that of course is what we are busy with now, consulting other departments. For example, on the issue of the plausible futures, the work that needed to be done was for a national treasury, for example, to project on the issue of the GDP growth going forward. And the view was that that process had not been sufficiently covered. And that is the kind of work that is currently being done. And, for example, the Department of Science and Technology is working on the energy technologies, basically, that we can expect going forward. On the establishment of IECs, instead of the two that we had expected to establish, we only achieved one chairperson, and that was the Gunu IEC. The Mbizana IEC fell behind schedule because, of course, we do these IECs with the assistance of the oil companies, but also with the necessary cooperation of the communities. And there are issues of the, for example, in Bizana, there were issues on the EIA that took longer than expected, but also the changes within PetroSA itself, which is the oil company that is developing that one. I must say that perhaps indicate here that although the Gunu IEC was established, we are finding that there are some challenges in the model that we are using for the IECs, particularly making sure that the cooperatives that run the IEC have got sufficient capacity. I think it's a matter that we assist with, even though the IEC has been operational, it has not been without challenges, Jefferson. We had also set ourselves the task of amending the Petroleum Products Act, and that we had to delay because of the delay in the completion of the review of compliance with the Liquid Fuels Charter. But as the DG has indicated, the audit has been completed, and was completed, but what we had agreed with the oil companies is that we would go back to them with the findings, and for them to make comments on the findings, and then the document would then be brought to cabinet as well as parliament. On the license applications, we basically had a plan of 3,600 inspections to ensure compliance. And during the year, we actually requested the minister for permission to reduce the number of inspections, partly because of the issues related to the budget, as well as there were some challenges with the transport in other areas. And of course, that permission was granted. There was an internal submission to that effect, and the number of inspections were reduced. But what was done was to say, let's have, rather than focus on numbers, let's focus on the quality of each of the inspections and improve on those, and also ensure that the word of mouth actually does spread that we are serious in as far as compliance is concerned. We also have participated in forums with some of the retailers, during which we basically were imparting the need for them to comply. So we believe that a targeted, not visiting each and every service station, but we need to ensure that over a period of time, we cover enough, we have enough visibility so that the industry does know that we are there. And then on the next bullet, I think I need to clarify this, because the way it's worded is, it can be misleading. In fact, it is misleading. The applications that we're talking to here are the ones that were not processed within 90 days, are the ones for which we had not received sufficient information from the applicant. Basically, by year end, as indicated, 95% of the applications were processed within the 90-day period, where all of the information was submitted by the applicants. In fact, we have taken a decision now to actually give notice to the applicants that if they don't respond to us within a certain number of days with the information that we require, we may actually be forced to basically close those files temporarily, because it then presents a backlog that is not a backlog, where people basically are failing to submit information, and in terms of our numbers, we are seen not to be complying. So those letters have gone out to all the applicants, and we believe that we are also going to be dealing now with all this issue of outstanding information. Then we also had a task of, as part of development of the IEP, developing regulations for collecting data, because it is going to be central in the development of the IEP. We had developed a regulation, and as indicated there, we had to consult with other ministries, which did take quite a while, but this was what the state law advisor had basically instructed us to do. And so this regulation could not be finalized in the last financial year because of the extended consultation process which was mandated by the state law advisor. On the regulatory accounting system, which I referred to, we have completed that work as planned during the year under review. We are now embarked on a process beginning of this financial year of what we call the rapid implementation system for the regulatory accounting system. It is going to have an impact on how business is done in liquid fuels. And it is quite, I think the outcomes of the process have been have indicated basically that there's got to be a shift, and that shift will require a period during which it is phased, because if we just implement as recommended, basically we will cause massive disruptions in the sector itself. I think in terms of the Transnet pipeline, I need to explain that delay, because it's not a workable funding mechanism only that was the issue. There was an internal review that was instituted by the Minister of Public Enterprises, which basically also had an impact on the, I think what the minister had been concerned about, which we were also concerned about, was the escalation in the cost of the NMPP. And however, that internal review we believe has been completed. But some of the reasons for the delay on the NMPP was negotiations with the landowners, particularly in sensitive environments. That basically was also part of the delay in the completion of the NMPP. So, Chairperson, I think just to conclude by saying that what the DG had referred to about skills and as well as the structure does affect us immensely. I'm not trying to make excuses for not achieving. However, I will make this point that the kind of skill that we need to do a country plan is a totally different skill to what we have generally had within the system. So we have embarked on a process of actually attracting specialists who will be specialists to do modeling, and that, of course, those skills within the country, they are not readily available. But also in terms of economic regulation in a dynamic environment, you also need agile kind of people. And I believe that this under resourcing, basically some plan has got to be made to actually deal with it, because quite frankly, I also said this myself, that we will do more with less. We have found, Chairperson, that we've stretched that less to the limit. There's just not much more that we can do unless we get more resources. Thank you, Chair.
Through you, Chair. Good morning. I'll take you through Program 3, which is the electricity, nuclear, and clean energy component. Starting with the purposes of the different chief directorates, electricity is to develop policies. We also provide policy in relation to the electrification program. Over and above that, we implement the electrification program, the capital program itself. we provide a governance structure for the nuclear sector in South Africa, including nuclear safety, nuclear non-proliferation, and from time to time looking at different nuclear technologies, particularly as we embark upon a nuclear build program. We're also responsible for the designated national authority, which is a mechanism under the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And side by side with that, in that directorate, we are responsible for the implementation of renewable energy and energy efficiency programs. If I move on to the next slide, in the financial year, we had set out certain objectives and measures, including to ensure a well-managed, efficient, and safe sector. And we would do that by implementing the nuclear energy policy. We would increase the extent of energy efficiency through policies and regulations. And in terms of that, the energy efficiency strategy envisaged a saving of 12% by 2015, and we would work to support that. And the issue around regulating nuclear material and ensuring its safe, shall we say, use through appropriate regulations. And we would have done certain of those regulations in that financial year. We had also undertaken that we would achieve about 100 megawatt saving through energy efficiency interventions like solar water heating, in terms of which a framework would have been published by June last year. Solar water heating framework would have been published like last year. And then we would have also improved energy efficiency in public buildings through the through interventions like the replacement or the retrofitting of inefficient lighting and other support programs. That also includes, in respect of municipalities, traffic lights and street lighting. We, over and above those objectives and measures that we had set for ourselves, is that we would have ensured that we promote the safe and sustainable use of electricity. And in that regard, there would have been a process that would lead to the publication of an appliance labeling and appliance standards process pursuant to energy efficiency measures. We would have accelerated the electrification program in order to reduce the backlog of 3.2 million households that have not been connected. A set target, which I will go into some detail later, would have been set. And then we would also, through this program, I think the DG alluded to that, connect some of these households through the non-grid electrification program as part of the broader electrification program. Regarding renewable energy technologies, we had set a target of 10,000 gigawatt hours by 2018 in line with the renewable energy white paper, and we would support projects in the renewable energy space through an incentive scheme. At that point, the renewable energy finance and subsidy scheme was the mechanism that we would use in order to achieve that objective. This is what we had set out in the past financial year. And Chair, if I can maybe we just take you through some of the issues that have been problematic, maybe starting with what we have achieved, what we have partially achieved, and then lastly what we did not achieve. On slide 35, the issue about the EDI restructuring, what we had said at that point was that not only would we find resolution to the REITs process, and as we well know, in the last quarter of last year, the REITs process was terminated by Cabinet, and we had then indicated that we would review the value chain in order to address those problems that were still in place, particularly the need for massive investment in the distribution sector to improve the quality of supply problem. Now, we have not been able to achieve certain aspects of the EDI restructuring. What we have managed to achieve was to do the termination of the REITs process to achieve the identification and mapping of the infrastructure that is critical but in a dire need for rehabilitation and refurbishment, and this is not indicated in the progress that was achieved, but under EDI restructuring, that's what we had achieved, say, for those two issues. And then we had set out to complete the integrated resource plan, and that was, shall we say, promulgated or approved by Cabinet in March last year, and then promulgated thereafter. And as DJ has indicated, we are in the process now of implementing it. The renewable energy feed-in tariff process, plus the introduction of fossil-fired power generation, would have been two initiatives that would achieve a measure of 200 megawatts, of additional 200 megawatts into the system. Now, that has been somewhat delayed, and therefore we regard it as being partially achieved. The renewable energy program is only now under a bidding program. We're confident we'll exceed the 200 megawatts. However, the intention was to do that by last year. And then we also have the open cycle gas turbine project of 1,000 megawatts, which did reach financial close in January this year, which was in the previous financial year, but unfortunately it has not been able to deliver the 200 megawatts. And between the two of those projects, we believe that there is sufficient megawatts to go well beyond the 200 megawatt target that we had set for ourselves. Chair, just to indicate that whilst we have said that there would be 200 megawatts under those two interventions, and those two interventions did not contribute as intended, the 200 megawatts was actually exceeded because the cogeneration contracts that have been signed to increase the megawatts are at least 373 megawatts as we speak. But Chair, we thought that we would not want to, to claim that has been related to what we had indicated. So it was achieved elsewhere. In terms of the, maybe starting with the energy efficiency and demand side management scheme, as I indicated, we had started the year on the basis of supporting the 12% target by 2015 through certain incentive schemes, including a scheme of rebates, and that program involves the transfer of funding to municipalities and ESCOM
in order to achieve energy efficiency savings. And as I've indicated, inefficient lighting gets replaced, street lighting gets replaced as well, traffic lights also get replaced. Now, in terms of this program, on the energy efficiency side, we have not been able to quantify the exact amount of savings that have been achieved through those interventions. I think that's the first thing that we would like to come clean on. And then over and above that, we had wanted to achieve energy efficiency savings through the solar water heating program. Now that has achieved a number of megawatts. We estimate about 68 megawatts have been saved through the solar water heating program. However, the solar water heating program would have contributed to energy efficiency in megawatts saved, but also in absolute numbers of energy of solar water heaters that would have been installed. So we did not achieve the number of solar water heaters that we had set out to do, even though it did contribute towards the savings that we had set for ourselves. Actually, on this one, we would like to also indicate that some work has been achieved in order to take the whole process forward around both energy efficiency and solar water heaters, even though it is in the next financial year, where the energy efficiency tax incentive scheme regulations were published, and they are, I believe, currently, maybe next week, and they will close from public comments. And this had been a condition that was imposed by National Treasury as a requirement that would ensure that we would not have two incentive schemes providing incentives for the same energy efficiency objective. The detail here is that on the one hand, we provide a tax break for energy efficiency savings achieved by companies, and at the same time, we have a tariff-based scheme administered through the Department of Energy, and there needed to be some alignment between those two. One of the other conditions that was imposed in order to ensure that the system worked properly was that we needed to fast-track the institutionalization of the South African National Energy Development Institute. And in September this year, this was achieved. So we believe that we will see a lot more uptake in relation to both solar water heaters and the energy efficiency and demand side management program. Maybe lastly, to indicate that whilst we put it under the, you know, the umbrella of that which has not been achieved, the standard offer program had progressed to the public consultation process, and now that the SANEDI condition has been satisfied, we believe that we'll be able to take this to the next level and then fast-track the installation of solar water heaters and energy efficiency. Chair, if I move on to slide number 47, again here we had set ourselves a program of supporting renewable energy projects, in terms of which we would provide certain financial support for project developers to do environmental impact assessments, feasibility studies, and so on. And Chair, this was overtaken last year, this Renewable Energy Finance and Subsidy Office. This was overtaken by the REFIT program at that point. And for the same reasons that I've indicated, we would have had a risk of double dipping here, where we would have provided incentives under RESO
and then provided additional incentives under the refit program. So it was not achieved, but deliberately because of the introduction of a different incentive scheme under the refit. Last year, we had wanted to obtain cabinet approval regarding the nuclear power program, and this was not achieved, primarily for two reasons. Firstly, was that the IRP was unfortunately only adopted this year and not in the, you know, in time for achievement, for making decisions on nuclear in the previous financial year. And secondly, Chair, apart from the IRP, is that we also had Fukushima early this year, and we deemed it a little bit, shall we say, insensitive to proceed with this transaction or decisions around the transaction under those circumstances, apart from having to understand the Fukushima accident in a little bit more detail. So that's one of the reasons, or those are the reasons that we did not proceed with the nuclear transaction. If I can also indicate that now this is in the process of being resuscitated, and there are new developments in that regard, and Cabinet is considering a proposal that has been submitted to them. And then, Chair, the issue around distribution networks and transmission networks and the rehabilitation, I did allude to the identification of the infrastructure that needs refurbishment. That has been done for metros. We have not completed all the secondary cities. We classified 18 cities as secondary cities. Of those, all the host cities for the FIFA World Cup of 2010 have been mapped in terms of where we need to intervene. And in terms, just strictly speaking, Chair, we have not really been able to achieve all 18 of them, even though we have done the whole cities, including all the metros. Over and above that, we had intended that we would make certain interventions to rehabilitate the infrastructure as a new priority that would focus on the regulatory aspects rather than the structural, you know, arrangements like rates and so on. Now, Chair, that is also another matter that is currently under consideration by Cabinet in terms of a programmatic approach to deal with the rehabilitation of municipal electricity distribution infrastructure. And then, Chair, legislation. Last year we had indicated that we wanted to also amend the Electricity Regulation Act. This was driven primarily by a broader program to improve the regulatory framework around power generation, particularly in the context of the introduction of independent power producers. One of the reasons we were not able to achieve this, Chair, was that it would have been premature to amend the legislation, you know, before getting to understand what those regulatory constraints were around the renewable energy IPP program. So we decided that, in fact, we needed to delay the introduction of the legislation so that all those constraints could, you know, holistically be accommodated in the amendment that we would make to the Electricity Regulation Act. In fact, Chair, what this has also, shall we say, uncovered is the fact that some of those regulatory constraints do not sit in the Electricity Regulation Act only, but there are other pieces of legislation. You're well aware of the ISMO bill, but also certain consequential and governance changes that we're making, that we're proposing to make to the electricity, sorry, to the National Energy Regulator Act, so that this becomes not a piecemeal but a holistic legislative review process. And Chair, I can also indicate that this year the whole package has been concluded from our perspective, and it is now currently being consulted through the cabinet process and will make its way here. I have touched a little bit on the solar water heating program under the solar, under the energy efficiency and demand side management program, but I did indicate here that in terms of absolute numbers for solar water heaters, we did have certain targets which we were not able to achieve. We estimate that we are lagging behind by about 100,000 systems. In the first year, we had said that we would do 55,000 systems, and then in the next year, sorry, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but we would have done, I think, closer to 150,000 systems. So we had intended to do around 200,000 systems, and we way behind in terms of that. And Chair, the big issue there is financing. We have not been able to work out at that point, you know, a financing mechanism that was not wholly dependent on fiscal allocations. And that is incidentally what we're saying that the standard offer incentive scheme will address. That's at the superficial level, but Chair, perhaps to also indicate before the questions come that over and above the absolute numbers, one of the issues that we had set out to do was to localize the solar water heaters and manufacture them in South Africa rather than import all of them. And that has been a little bit problematic in relation to what we have installed so far. And the standard offer scheme has certain, shall we say, mechanisms in place to deal with that. And then lastly, Chair, the penetration has been predominantly in the low income segment of the market, whereas you wanted a more balanced portfolio. So we have been able to, you know, from a socioeconomic impact perspective, we have been fairly successful, but in terms of absolute reduction in energy consumption, I think there's room for improvement there. And I think that's the end of it from the branch perspective, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will present the annual financial statements for the year that ended 31 March 2011. CFO's branch includes the IT department, the supply chain management, which takes care of the procurement, expenditure management, which will ensure payments happen, budget and reporting with internal control, which does some of the review work within the finance department. The Department of Energy started operating independently on the 1st of April 2010. Therefore, the financials that I'll be presenting now will be for the full financial year of 12 months. The department was allocated 30% of the resources from the former Department of Minerals and Energy. However, this resulted in huge challenges for the newly established Department of Energy, and specifically for finance, it was the capacity constraints and severe lack of skills. And with this, it was mainly due to the requirements, new requirements that was from National Treasury and AG, and the finance department wasn't always equipped to deliver according to request. The department had to implement a number of strategies to ensure service delivery, which included the preparation of the annual financial statements for this annual audit, which I'll be presenting. Despite the challenges, Chair, related to the establishment of the new department and the limited resources, the department did perform as per the requirements of legislation and internal deliverables. However, there is a room for improvement. A new audit committee was established and appointed in September 2010. The financial statements, which I will present shortly, has been prepared on a cash basis only. You will also note, in terms of other departments, we don't have comparative figures, and this is purely because we are a new department, and the figures from the prior years will still reside with the Department of Mineral Resources. You have in front of you the income statement with the total revenue, which is made up of the budget of 5.6 billion, petroleum licenses of 3.7 million, and the others are small amounts made up from interest and recovery of prior debts, giving us a total of 5.658 billion for the financial year that ended. We have used the money to pay current expenditure of 234 million. The current expenditure is for all operating expenses, that's salaries, compensation of employees, and goods and services. Further on, I will give a breakdown though. It was also the substantial amount that was spent was for transfers and subsidies. A detailed list of transfers made against budget and to whom it was paid will be presented in detail in a slide that follows. Expenditure for capital assets was 3.3. In total for the financial year, we spent 5.5 out of a balance of 5.6. 151 was not spent. It was a surplus for the year. However, some of the funds have been requested as a rollover from Treasury. The next slide gives us an overview of the major by economic classification, if I put it that way. Transfers and subsidies, we had a budget of 5.3. We've actually spent 5.2, giving us a percentage spend of 97.7%. I will explain the reasons for the balance that was not spent. Compensation of employees, we had 143.3 million. We spent 142.8. We almost spent 100%, but the small percentage that remains unspent is for vacancies that happened at year-end. It's basically the timing of those vacancies. Under goods and services, we had 105 million. We've spent 91. We have spent 87.1%. Almost 12% was unspent. And the reasons for these, I will give you a breakdown later in another slide, but much of this money has been requested as a rollover from Treasury. Payments for capital goods, what am I doing here? 5.2, we were budgeted, we spent 3.3, we've only spent 63.5% of the budget, but the major reason for this is we were going to move to new office accommodation, which was delayed by the Department of Public Works, and much of the money was set aside for the relocation of those office space and the IT infrastructure. In total, we had 5.6 million. We spent 5.5. In total, if you look at it, it was 97.4% of the total budget that we spent. This slide gives us an overview of the department's performance by program. Under administration, which includes the ministry, the DG's office, the CFO's office, the COO, and corporate services, they had 127.5 million. They've only spent 122. There's 4% that wasn't spent. And the 4% that wasn't spent was mainly due to the underspending and outstanding payments, which was delayed but has been included in the rollover request. So not all has been lost in that area. Under hydrocarbons and energy planning, we had 1.5 billion. We spent a little bit less than that. Here we have almost spent 100% of the budget. The slight percentage that remains, although it's slight, it does equate to 8.2 million. It was mainly due to vacancies within the branch, and 2.2 million was for outstanding payments for goods and services. Chair, I just want to highlight that this actual spend and the budget here includes
everything for compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers, and capex spend. So we're speaking across all categories per program. The third area is electricity, nuclear, and clean energy. We had 431. We spent 408. The part that we didn't spend is mainly due to outstanding transfer payments to REFSO of 20 million and vacancies of 1.58 in electricity, nuclear, and clean energy. The last program, associated services, is the state-owned entities reporting to the minister. We had 3.5 billion to be transferred as a budget. We've transferred 3.4. We had a 3% which was not transferred. And that is mainly due to INEP non-grid. And this slide, Chair, if we can just highlight that the department had a budget of 5.6 billion. We spent 5.5. 2.5% of the budget has not been spent, which equates to 143 million. Of the 143 million, we've requested a rollover for 100 million. Treasury approved 88. The unused 55 million has to be returned to Treasury. Of the 55 million that we're going to return to Treasury, 49 million is for non-grid in the INEP program. The analysis of the financial performance, the main reasons for the underspending is, which I've mentioned, the transfers to INEP, 114 million, transfers to REFSO of 20 million, and outstanding transfer payments to EDI. Although the payments to EDI was approved by Treasury, at year-end, it couldn't be transferred as the department didn't have a legal obligation to pay the 5 million over. But it has been paid after year-end, though. Other delays that contributed to the underspend was delays in the procurement of capital assets and vacancies within the department. Asset management also was an underspend. But the reason here is we received a lot of assets from DMR as a transfer. And as I mentioned earlier on, some of the money was within the department earmarked for the relocation of office accommodation. Chair, under the financial performance, it continues with transfers and subsidies. Here, it's a breakdown. We had 5.3 billion to be transferred. We transferred 5.2. We didn't transfer 126 million. The biggest contributor is the 114 for non-grid, 5 million to EDI, and REFSO of 20 million. However, there was a minus, you can see a negative figure here. This was overpayment to municipalities, which has been recovered subsequent to year-end, fully recovered. The detailed expenditure, the top five categories would be compensation of employees, travel, that's 142.8 million, travel and subsistence includes local and overseas of 30.3 million, operating leases, which takes care of our accommodation of office and regional office space, equipment hire, and consultants of 10.5, which includes the audit fees for the AG of 2 million, close to 2 million, venues and facilities for the functions and conferences that are held. Although we have not fully spent the budget that was allocated to all these expenditure, some have been requested as a rollover and paid subsequent to year end. Chair, this is the balance sheet of the department, and I'm just going to go over the highlights of the main figures. The unauthorized expenditure, I will explain this figure of 14.8 million. It's part of the audit report that has been highlighted also from the AG, so I will give a full explanation of the 14.8 in another slide. The 136 million is the funds that was in the bank within at year end, 31 March. It also includes some of the revenue that we still had to transfer at year end. However, all that has been done after year end. Receivables, it includes the biggest amount of 13 million, which was the overpayment to municipalities, which I mentioned has been recovered after year end. And the other amounts, Chair, is just are explained in the notes on the financial statements themselves. Okay. The 14.8 million, which I just mentioned, is a transfer to a municipality using an incorrect vote. And the receivables, as I explained, was the 9.3 million receivable from the municipalities. And the total liabilities of 165 million includes 158 for revenue to be surrendered to National Revenue Fund and 4 million to be paid over to the Department of Mineral Resources for the Independent Power Producer Project. Chair, the reason this slide is up for the information technology management, for the audit that ended 31 March 2011, the AG had some concerns, which I tried to address on the slide as well. The department has upgraded the petroleum licensing system, which was an issue in the previous financial year when the department was part of the Department of Minerals and Energy. However, substantial upgrade has happened. The department is now able to identify outstanding license, petroleum license amounts, and also to track the receipts thereof. However, there are some improvements still going to happen this financial year, and one of the biggest improvements that's going to be put in is a mechanism to calculate the interest on outstanding amounts as required by Treasury. And under the financial year for the 2010, the system availability was 70%, which has been an increase from the prior financial year. The average availability in 2011 calendar year is 97%. This is a huge improvement from the previous financial year, and I think here the skills in the hygiene department has improved substantially as well. Having said all what I did, Chair, brings us to the important part. The department did receive an unqualified audit opinion. However, there has been an emphasis of matter without a qualification on these matters. The department did have an unauthorized expenditure of 14.8 million, irregular expenditure of 110 million, and a further irregular expenditure of 1.3 million. The department has completed an action plan to address the AG findings, but the biggest contributor to these findings, Chair, was due to capacity constraints and the inadequate skills that was needed at year-end as we prepared for the financial year audit. However, there are plans in place to address the skills shortage within the department. And much of these irregular expenditure happened due to the capacity constraint, but the reason thereof is there was no segregation of duties. Because there were limited staff, the staff was expected to do compromising functions. But as I'm stating, Chair, that it has been addressed. I just want to go into detail and now explain the unauthorized expenditure of 14.8 million. The unauthorized expenditure was as a result of payments made to the municipality using an incorrect vote. These funds were part of the 2009 vote, which belonged to the ex-department DME. Due to a rejection of this transaction on the system, the payment was dispersed in the new financial year of the new department in 2010-2011. However, the department is in the process of requesting authorization from National Treasury for this particular transaction. However, Chair, but I would like to mention, as much as it's classified as unauthorized expenditure, it has been paid to the correct party, that is the municipality. The correct amount has been paid. It is per the DORA that has been approved, but just paid in the wrong year due to a rejection on the system. So apart from that, there is nothing that's irregular about this particular transaction. It was only paid in the incorrect year. And we are in the process of getting some authorization. The department has, however, addressed the above weakness to avoid a repetition. So all rejections on the system is now reviewed within 24 hours, and action plans have been put in place. And the action plans will also be followed up via internal audit and the National Treasury, which will be performing an interim audit to ensure that this does not happen again. The next irregular expenditure is for 110 million, although an alarming amount. The irregular expenditure was as a result of a transfer payment to Nexa that was voted in the 2010-11 financial year. The irregular part, as AG deems it to be irregular, is purely a clinical classification, if I can put it that way. The amount has been approved in the DORA Act. It has been approved by the Minister and the DG. It's been gazetted. So an internal process has not been followed in terms of the authorization. Apart from that, there is nothing irregular about the payment. The payment went in to the correct party, that was Nexa, the correct amount, and the correct period. It was just not approved by a director within the department. And the reason for this, when the department split from DME, the expenditure management department didn't have a director, it didn't have a deputy director, it only had an assistant director. And due to capacity constraints, this was an oversight. But the control deficiency has been addressed. There are action plans in place to ensure the delegation of authority for this financial year and going forward is managed more stringently. And with the new ERP system coming into place for the next financial year, the delegation of authority would be automated. But for now, it remains manual, but plans are in place to ensure it doesn't happen again. The last irregular expenditure of 1.3 million, this is indeed irregular. It was due to the non-compliance with the SEM processes, that's the procurement processes within the department, and the prescripts and the practice notes set by National Treasury. Much of the non-compliance happened due to emergencies and specifics that happened at that point in time. Future non-compliance with procurement processes has been addressed, and the DG has taken a more stringent and a hard approach to non-compliance. We have implemented disciplinary actions if non-compliance happens from here on. And these plans would be audited by the Internal Audit Department and the Auditor General when they come to do their interim audit. And that's all in terms of the financial statements, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, just briefly to conclude our presentation, can I take the honourable members, the chair, through the audit of the performance information? I think all members are aware of the challenges that have been presented by the Auditor General in the performance in the audit of our performance information. What I think as an introduction is that what happens when the Auditor General audits performance information, they look for three things. They look for consistency in terms of the information. In other words, they look at your mandate, they look at the strategic objectives, they look at your predetermined objectives, right up to the way of reporting. They compare that with the information at the end of the year, how we have performed against all of those. Secondly, they look at the relevance of the information in terms of how relevant in terms of the period. Have you reported on what you did on the period under review? They also look at the relevance in terms of the information and the relevance to the mandate of the department. And then lastly, they would look at your measurability of the information, especially on the areas of your measures, your targets, your how you presented your information. Is it measurable? Are you able to explain and have, over and above it, what I'll call your supporting documentation to show that this is where you got your information to prove that you have actually achieved the target or not. With that background, I'll just like to briefly say we had a challenge as a department in that case, because when we did our strategic plan for the 10-11 financial year, we did it in November 2009, which was before National Treasury gave us an annual report stroke year-end reporting framework. So what we had done as a department for our own internal use, we had split the areas where we have your target, your performance objective, then we have your measure, you'll have your target, then you have your initiative. When National Treasury came up with their framework, they did not take into account the initiative, just wanted to give you the objective, measure, performance, as you'll see in the annual report. So in our presenting our information at the end of the financial year then, we had to take into account those changes. And in the process of doing that, we had to combine information in our activities back into our annual targets, which created some misunderstanding between the HG and ourselves in terms of how we have provided the information to them. It was supposed to be exactly the way it was in the strat plan, but we could not because the new framework did not allow us to do that. So those were the major changes that actually were experienced. But I think as a summary, there are four areas that are of concern to the Auditor General in terms of our performance information. First of all was, of course, the issue of the alignment of our strategic plan, what is in the strat plan, and also of the annual report in terms of our measures and targets. Because what they do, they look at exactly what is in the strat plan, it must be exactly what is in the performance information. They have set with individual directorates or chief directorates specifically for areas where they're concerned to verify for themselves that the information there, although the language was different, although the phrasing was different, did it mean the same thing and did it have enough supporting information, and they were fairly comfortable with most of what they found there. But I think the next challenge that we had, which I think the department still needs to improve on as a department, is the issue of the measurability of our measures and our targets. That is one thing that we are seriously working on. I think we can improve a lot on that one. Because in some of the measures that were put forward by the department, we, at the end of the year, we find a challenge in actually reporting against them because they are not measurable, number one, or we needed a baseline. Being a new department, some areas, even if we did have a baseline, especially in cross-cutting issues like your HR environment, your finance environment, that would have been a baseline that has been provided for under the DME environment, not the DOE environment. So under DOE, you wouldn't have a baseline there. So when you start trying to report, then it becomes a challenge. When you have a percentage without a baseline, it becomes a challenge. So it's those kinds of issues that have been raised that you are looking into. The other aspect that has been identified was the changes to the planned objectives, the measures and the targets that were presented. I think Mr. Makubela has given one of the examples where we had to change the number of inspections for the year. Those are some of the areas that have been identified where we set them with them. Much as, especially in the area which Makubela has identified, much as we did get the internal agreement with the minister in terms of saying, fine, you can change because these are the reasons. We were supposed, when we presented our performance information on the 31st of May, included that. But unfortunately, we did not. So it became a reportable item. Also, in other than the issue of identifying those changes, we needed, and also the issue of the authority, we had to indicate in the report itself that this was the previous, this is the revised. What we did, we just put the revised and we reported against the revised instead of putting both of them on the report. And that's where the issue has been identified as well. What we have decided, just to update the honourable members, is that we will be doing our midterm review next month. No, this is the month, November. I mean October. We will be doing our midterm review to make sure that all of those changes, all of those things that you are talking about are catered for, so that at the end of the year we don't come up with minor
problems with creating and eventually becoming big issues when actually just minor things of the wedding or where one is sitting kind of situation. Lastly, one of the issues that we raised in the audit report was the issues on the reporting on issues that are not in the strat plan under our predetermined objectives. We did have a few instances where the strat plan did not clearly identify those actions, but when we reported, then we put them in our performance information. When they went back to the strat plan, they were not there. So it's not because it was something that just came out of the air, just that when we were breaking down for the activities or this to be done, we did not identify a particular aspect. And then when we reported on it. So they're not happy about that, much as we call it in the department unplanned achievements. But it's just an omission, I have to be honest, in terms of how we've identified our work in terms of our predetermined objectives and what we wanted to do. So that is basically what we've done. So what we've done, we agreed with them, was that all this information, which was about three or four items, not present a lot, like the issue of the education of schools. We focus mostly in our strat plan on the housing and the clinics. The schools were not specifically mentioned in our targets, but they were mentioned in the text of the document. So what we did, we moved it back to the text of the document as well, so that it aligns to what is sitting in the strat plan. So overall, that was what the AG was concerned about. And like I said, we are working on improving that with the hope that next year we'll have a much favorable report out of the performance information of the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Siri. That's more than a mouthful. Shall we meet a break before members come in with their questions? Do you think we take a break, refresh, 10-minute break, then we come back for questions? There is fresh coffee as well. Thank you.
Especially when it comes to our focus. I mean, it's like a couple of courses ago, but before they're still doing the
Carlos, how are you? Good. Yeah, you know,
Thank you for your presentation.
Okay. Thank you. Are you attending?
Trade industry.
Is it interesting?
Yeah, it is quite interesting.
Yeah. Is it? Okay.
Coffee is everywhere.
Yeah. Management, you would not necessarily link it to communication, but anyway. I'm a government communicator. I trained with GCIS, I studied with GCIS, I studied with postal communication, and then I studied in government at GCIS. I went to labor. The last two.
Honourable members,
we've refreshed adequately. Now it's question time. Question, comments?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, perhaps just a comment in regard to pricing and issues related to pricing, and it's about the aim of providing affordable energy and universal access to energy to people, and then in terms of the MDG to eradicate the poverty also. We saw that the IBT has been introduced, but it's marked as a very positive for the department. But in terms of implementation at local level, I think there's still huge challenges. Just to take note of that, and we know that we have to cushion the poor, and that we really have to see that the IBT is working effectively. But then also in terms of pricing, in regard to businesses and ordinary citizens of South Africa, also to see that we afford them affordable pricing for energy, because there's so many jobs that can get lost if we can't afford it. But that's the one side of the coin, Chair. My concern is also that we saw in the slides the lack of significant investment, and that is perhaps because of low prices. So we, at some point in time, I think, if just taking us a bit forward, I think it would be advisable if we can have a workshop in terms of pricing and see what would the correct methodology be, where we should be going to. And just in terms of methodology and technology in terms of adjudicating these prices, Eskom, I believe, is working with the MEA, Modern Equivalent Asset Evaluation Method. And is it then a percentage invested that they need to recover to at least see that they make ends meet? But what would the implications now be? I see we know what the implications was in terms of the new power coal-fired power plants that were built, that we saw increases of 25% times 5 over a long period of time. But what would the implications now be, just taking us forward, if we look at the new nuclear build or the proposed nuclear build? I know we're waiting for the pronouncement of Cabinet, but what would the issue on pricing be for ordinary South Africans? And if we can have some indication in regard to that. That's the my first question, if somebody can give me some information regarding that. Just in connection with the supply of liquid fuels and reliable supply, the LPG issue. We saw many job losses in the Western Cape, particularly lately. If we can just look at that again. It should be an alternative for electricity, and it should be cheaper. And it seems highly problematic now where people are closing down factories because there's no supply. And if we can just look at that for the current situation. And the clean fuels program, the biofuels, the compulsory blending. I have a government gazetted where I have the information that 2% is now compulsory blending of ethanol into the petroleum mix. And then our presenter indicated that these regulations would be enforced in 2017. I know there would be huge investment required for filling stations to see that ethanol is part of that energy mix or the fuel mix, but if I can have some indication as to progress there. And then, yes, I think so. And then, of course, distribution also. We're also waiting for Cabinet to pronounce on distribution. The best news that we received in distribution in terms of the funding model was the FFC, Financial and Fiscal Commission, that said perhaps a once-off conditional grant of 32 billion to address the problem. In terms of distribution, I think we can't really mark ourselves into the green there. I think it's still a red flag waving. And just your comments on that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks. And I must also apologize for not having attended in some of the meetings this week, but in fact I've been attending Public Enterprises that has had ESCOM presenting to it. So perhaps I can use some of the insights gained from there to what's the challenge of the department year. One of the issues that did in fact come up in those meetings and which I'd like to take on here is related to Honourable Ross's question around pricing. And this issue around the price elasticity of energy as well. Because one of the big concerns going forward is that, I mean, as far as my understanding of pricing is that NERSA sets the required revenue for ESCOM as opposed to the actual price for that. So if we have a situation where either energy efficiency really takes off and the demand goes down for energy, or we have a situation where the demand for energy just goes down because the price starts to price people out of the market, what we would have then is that we could have a situation of runaway pricing in South Africa, which is a highly undesirable situation. Has the department thought about this in terms of the IRP and in terms of the kind of new build capacity that they're wanting to bring on stream? And particularly, as Honourable Ross said, you know, if we are planning on spending 1 trillion rand on nuclear build, will this lock us into an energy future where in fact we might sit with stranded assets? And I say this not as a hypothetical statement, but that this is a real concern, and this has happened before in our history, and we want to make sure that we have the right optimum planning for the way that we bring assets on stream in terms of generation capacity. So if you can speak about that. Just going through this document, I was looking at the draft strategic stocks policy that you I presume this is stocks, this is oil stocks, I presume. And you were talking about building more capacity for that. But I mean, as far as I understand, we have huge capacity in South Africa, particularly in Saldanha. In fact, from what I understand, we've got the biggest capacity in the world in terms of holding oil stocks. So do we need to build more? I'm just wondering where that is coming from and what the plan is in terms of having to build more. Then also electricity distribution, which Honourable Ross referred to. You know, this is, I think it's more than just a red flag. I mean, the problem is that I am not seeing any coherent vision coming out from government on electricity distribution. And I think that this is a major, major failing that we're sitting with. We originally started with the EDI holdings. We had the REDS idea. Now we've shelved all of that. But I'd like to ask, who is responsible for developing a coherent vision as to how we are going to tackle this issue of electricity distribution in South Africa? Because from where I'm seeing it, that no one seems to be taking the bull by the horns on this issue. And the thing, it's just leading to major problems, both in terms of the 42 billion rand backlog in electricity distribution networks in our municipalities, as well as the fact that municipalities are left free to put on these surcharges, which is clearly going to be called into question. And this is a very complex issue. I recognize that, and I don't think anyone has the answers. But who is actually responsible for driving a new vision with regards to electricity distribution in the country? Because somebody really needs to take hold of this issue. I'd be interested to hear your comments.
Honourable Dexter, followed by Honourable Dow.
Thanks, Chair. Well, Chair, I think that we must note the improvement in the administration of the department. I think it's quite clear that given, you know, that it was a new department and all the challenges, I think the DG and her team should be commended for the fact that we can see that there's a much more hands-on approach in terms of management. But I think that, you know, like last year and the year before, the most glaring thing about the presentation is that whether you look at anything with pricing, distribution, renewables, the governance of the SOEs, innovative ideas, the rollout of the solar water heaters, I think there's a sense of torpid mediocrity is the only way I can describe it. It's like, you know, the rest of us live in this world where this is an emergency, a priority, and, you know, it seems to be business as usual. There's absolutely no sense of vision, strategy, or leadership in relation to the energy challenge. I mean, I heard the comments earlier about we don't have expertise and so on. We received a presentation from the National Planning Commission where they've got an expert in there who's doing all that work at the level of the NPC. So why is it that, you know, these sorts of people can't be brought together so that we don't have duplication and we use the skills that are there? But frankly speaking, I think the idea that you need Einstein to put together a plan for the country is ridiculous. We all know what needs to be done. It's really common sense. So, you know, I must admit, I don't accept the department's view and report on these matters. I think I, for one, you know, I'm demoralized by listening to perpetual excuses about these things. I mean, you just look at the Central Energy Fund. I mean, it's a fantastic entity. All those resources, all that capability, it's done absolutely nothing of any value that I can see. It hasn't taken us forward an inch as a country. So, you know, one would like to see some decisive action. Chop some heads off, get rid of the dead wood, clean up the structure. You know, give some confidence to the country that you actually mean to take us out of this, you know, as I said, this torpor, this almost sleepwalk. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Chair. I think I've got to wake up. You can't trust these guys. All right, let's see where we go from here. Let me first align myself with what Honorable Dexter said, not about the last part of his statements, but about his opening remarks about the report and the department officials and stuff like that. But I'd like to add a rider to that. Getting an unqualified report is no cause for celebration. Eh? That's what is expected. Right? We should just know that I'm not going to sit here and praise the department for an unqualified report. No. That's the norm. That should be the norm. But well done. So we know that. Now, I want the department to square this circle for me. Before I do that, when the department reports a surplus, I really, really sort of get very, very muddled up, because the only time you're going to have a surplus is when you have spent all the money that you have and you have leftover which you can give to somebody else. And this department cannot report a surplus because we need money to fill vacancies, to do all sorts of things. And here we are giving money back to the Treasury. 54 million rand. How can you give money back to the Treasury? 54 million rand. All right? Now, I know how we can do that. We are doing that because we have a problem, and I'm not going to use that nice euphemism called challenges. But we have a problem with staffing our structure. And every one of the senior managers sitting here feels that pain. They know that. Now, I'm going to put a challenge to you, and I'm linking up with what Mr. Makubela said. We cannot, because of a constraint on human resources, reduce the number of inspections and then say, okay, we can reduce the number of inspections, but we'll increase the quality. No, we need both. We need quality, we need quantity. Because you see, if you don't inspect it, it never gets done. That's a very basic principle of management. People do what is inspected, not what is expected. So, the department leaders, and you are it, have got to come up with a plan. Nobody's going to do it. The minister is not going to do it. The minister is not coming with it. He's going to come with a plan and say, okay, guys, I have this plan. This is how we're going to deal with under-resourcing in terms of HR. You, ladies and gentlemen, have to sit and come up with a plan and say, Minister, this is what we've planned. This is the money we need. We have to capacitate ourselves. And please go fight with your colleagues in the cabinet, and then we can do it. And then you guys will definitely do much, much better. And I think for me, the biggest worry is to have a situation where we take money back to the treasury. It means not only are we spending still, we're going backwards. Because remember, what you have lost, you can never regain. If you lose it, it's gone. It's not going to be regained. So please let us look into that, and then hopefully we can get that solar water heating thing, which is my real pet hope. I don't think we're going to make that target. No way we're going to make it. I've asked the minister. She said we will. We will never make it. It's not going to happen. The other thing that I really need to underline, gas. I have to talk to Mr. Macrovella in aligning myself to my colleague here. We have a serious situation here. It's another one of our contradictions. We're trying to win people off electricity to gas, but we don't have gas to give them. How can we do that? And I can tell you, it's coming out my ears. People are coming to me complaining, guys, what are you doing? If I had the letter here, I'd read it to you, that this desperate retailer who say, I have to shut down my doors. I don't have supply. So we need to come up with a plan, guys. Thank you, Chair.
Well, let me add to the excitement. I think in the first place, I've just noticed something. I even commented to members that this is my second term in Parliament. It's the first time we have a presentation of annual report for almost 2 hours. In fact, you said, Coops, it's 2 hours, 15 minutes. I trust and hope it's not just about the volume, but it's about the character of reporting now, because it takes on board into a lot of things. One also has observed with great admiration the fact that you highlight achievements, partial achievements, and non-achievements. Well, I'll reserve my right as to whether I agree with the non-achieved areas or not, but at least that is very, very helpful. That's honesty. And I'm sure you acknowledge and you are quite alert that it means from now onwards, particularly in the context of the new approach in the budget review cycle, we will be monitoring you quite automatically in areas that you have either partially achieved or not achieved. You yourself have put yourself a shashalazi. Of course, echoing Honorable Mutau's points, you know, it's fine to lodge you on unqualified financial report, but while saying keep it up, that is what is expected, you know. One can then also say that that implies that it means you can build a culture of this new department growing on that basis. Whether some of you move on to other areas, you know, please entrench that culture, not just a practice, but entrench that culture such that those who may take over will know this is how this department was established, and this is how it will go. You know, anyone who diverts or derails it is a black sheep, and even a blacker sheep than black. Of course, I have also my queries for now, which I would like you to give responses to. Let's start with what's striking here. Program one, I didn't see the structure of achievements, partial achievements and non-achievements. I hope honorable members, I didn't miss that. Because amongst other things, the training program. I say, well, I'm really taking the big, thick book. Hopefully then it's there. There's a training program, 262 employees participated in it, but what was the target? Because
for a growing department like this, we're very, very keen to see how are you building that. What was the target? And I think just out of interest, one would like to get a copy of the energy efficiency awareness campaign. You say radio dramas and things. I trust and members can also comment. I think we need to be given examples of that, because as far as I can say, you know, that activity is very far and few, you know, in between. What is the problem? Isn't GCIS assisting you and you collaborating with others? In fact, a very, very pertinent question would be 49M. I've written letters to the service providers that were appointed by ESCOM, just as an example. I gave up. I've spoken to ESCOM Sunder Management. I've given up now. You only see billboards, you know, fancy billboards or something in the airport and that thing. For it to go beyond that, I'm sure when we meet ESCOM, they can tell us about 49M. But the question to you, to what extent are you collaborating with ESCOM? Because I assume that 49M is part of the energy efficiency drive. I'll just stick to... Oh, yeah. The other thing, you know, when we made reference to Clean Fuels 2, what just came up in my mind is an issue which I don't know whether you're part of it, whether it's only driven by the National Planning Commission. It's something I got exposed to a workshop which I attended with transition to low carbon economy. One assumes that the department would be very much integral in that. To what extent are you collaborating with them in that arena? Linked to still the staffing or human resource issue, you see, when it came to modeling the IEP, you had challenges around getting, you know, funds for the requisite staff. The same would be linked to what you indicated when you meet your input around the NMPP, once again, special skills. The question I would like to know, to what extent when you presented this to the National Treasury, what response did you get from them? Maybe let me finish that issue and say, exactly is your human resource plan around skill shortages? That's generally, not in detail, because this issue keeps on coming. Just the key points as to how do you plan to resource. Because from the day I got exposed more substantially to the plans of the department, that is your strategic plan in November last year, this issue kept on coming. In fact, one of the things I would like to get clarified is that your presentation now is coming in a different way. You're saying you've got 7% vacancy rate. Now, on which basis? On the old structure, on the new structure? You know, maybe just refresh us. What ideally would you like to see as a staff complement in order for you to move forward? And much as I'm cautious to align myself with Honorable Dexter, but still, before I align myself or stand on the other side, I would like you to really respond to his, you know, skepticisms of the fact that you need special skills. You know, please go to town to elaborate on that. I think that's all for me for now. Over to the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And also thank you to the honourable members with the questions. I'll just indicate to my colleagues that I will answer some of the questions, and then if you can just keep track so that you can pick up those. But
sorry, Mrs. Nelly, sorry. It's just that I have too many papers on top. Just before you start, can you just reiterate something very, very pertinent? At the beginning, you made reference to challenges, service delivery, challenges in service delivery environment. And then also there was another area in challenges in organizational environment. If you could bring those two closer and see, just rehash them. Because we need to be clear as to whether we are agreeable on them, honorable members, or not. You know, because those are two areas which I assume at times they either make or break you. Sorry to belabor the point, but it's essential. Just a few seconds on them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. The issues that we raise in the service delivery environment, we outlined them first in page 15. And they were basically concentrating not in the organizational environment, but to the outside environment. And what we're saying that during the year under the review, there was a challenge around the economic meltdown, and accurately projecting the economic growth of the country was a bit of a challenge, because you'll recall, Chairperson, as I've indicated, that as the energy sector, we see ourselves as an opportunity for economic growth, which will subsequently be instrumental in job creation. So for us, we need to be able to plan for a requisite economic growth that is going to ensure job creation. However, what we had in the previous financial year was a situation where there was a recession, and as such, it was quite a challenge to be able to say, this is where we are, but this is where we want to go in terms of the economy of this country. And hence, therefore, we are planning for the energy sector to go in that particular direction. That is in the outside environment. But also, we needed to ensure that we integrate our plans to address the security of energy supply. If what we basically are meaning there is that we needed to ensure then that what is happening in the liquid fuel sector and what is happening in the electricity sector should not happen in isolation. It should be integrated. Let me just give you a very practical example, Chair. At the moment, for us as a department, would like to see the transportation of liquid fuels being done through rail rather than through the roads. But that has got an impact on the electricity supply, because we need to make sure that there is adequate electricity supply for those wagons to move from Durban to inland. And also, in terms of the lack of investment in the energy sector, Chairperson, we have had a number of interventions in the sector through the value chain. If I can just give you a practical example in the electricity sector. There is a significant lack of investment in the distribution sector. In fact, if I can just, I will be responding to the detailed questions. But because of this lack of investment, we are going to be seeing a situation where we're unable to deliver the energy to the end consumer, because one part of the value chain, in this part one in particular, the distribution sector, is under-resourced, or rather there has not been much investment in that section. And also, the issue, we cannot plan outside climate change and global warming in an integrated manner. We need to ensure then that whatever it is that we do within the energy sector, it addresses the issues of climate change. So effectively, we need to talk to issues around clean fuels. We need to talk to issues around ensuring that we deploy renewable energy. And also, it's in the refining sector. Our refineries, they are all aging. Most of them, they are between anything between 30 to 50 years. And those refineries, so as such, we are beginning to see more and more outages in that regard. Because there are more, as you see more outages, then that's when you end up having a situation where we are struggling to ensure that there is adequate supply. And one of the issues around the LPG, the refineries are right in the heart of it, where they, we find a situation where the refinery is down, and as such, not adequate LPG is being produced. So, hence, therefore, we need to come up with a different strategy on how to ensure that there is adequate LPG in that particular sector. Because the refineries are beginning to say to us, well, we can produce so much LPG, so it means that we need a different plan to ensure that we address those challenges. And now, in terms of the internal environment, Chairperson, we are a highly technical department, and what we have to do, we must ensure that we attract the requisite skills to ensure that that technical work gets executed. In fact, the majority of the people in the department, it's mainly scientists, if I can put it that way. It's scientists and engineers, and that is what is required by the sector that we are in. In order for us to be able to make sure that we've got informed policies, we've got to have facts. So we must make sure that our policies are fact-based, and most of those people who need to make sure that they compile those facts, they must have the requisite technical understanding and the technical know-how. It's not going to help us, Chairperson, to get a social worker to come and plan on refineries and plan on renewable energy. We have to have the right people so that whatever it is that we give out to the industry, it actually resonates and talks to them, because we understand where they come from. So for us, Chairperson, we cannot overemphasize the need to have highly skilled, highly technical people in order to ensure that we deliver what is required by both the society and industry in order for us to have energy security. Now, Chairperson, if I can just quickly address some of the questions that have been raised by honourable members, but my colleagues are going to pick up on that. Honourable Ross, the issue of an IPT, you are absolutely right, it is a challenge. We have a situation here where we're saying the person who consumes the lowest amount of electricity must pay as little as possible, with the hope that it's going to pick up by the higher consumer. Unfortunately, we've got two challenges there. Municipalities use electricity as a revenue stream. That's the first thing. Secondly, what is happening is that on the high end, especially with municipalities, because most of their customers are residential customers, they are unable to recover whatever it is that they've given out at the lower end. So effectively, it means we still need additional fiscal support to address the customers at the lower end, because the municipalities are not recovering enough, and as such, we are finding a situation where they're simply not going to implement the IBT because it's not in their interest. So again, I'm hoping that the FFC did mention that at the end of the day, we are actually we're trying to solve a fiscal problem using electricity. And as such, that is creating unintended consequences where suddenly electricity is unaffordable. So that is the biggest challenge that we have. So the electricity issue cannot be discussed outside the bigger fiscal debate, because somehow it's clear that the energy, if we say we want to create jobs, you need to have reasonably priced energy. Now, if it's unaffordable, then we are not going to be able to create those jobs. So this is a discussion that needs to be had. It's a fiscal challenge that we are trying to address using energy. Now, so effectively, what is it that we're going to do? that is one of the discussions now we're having with Treasury, because I think over the years we have not been able to get through to this, that we need to deal with this matter in a holistic fiscal discussion rather than separately from that discussion. Pricing of energy. Honourable members, I mean, I cannot agree with you. Actually, we are very, very concerned with even with the regulatory, the way the regulatory methodology of NERSA when it comes to awarding monies to ESCOM. What is happening as we speak is that ESCOM goes to NERSA and requests a certain amount of money based on how much are they going to build. Now, that is creating a very, very perverse incentive that even if, say, they don't meet their targets, in other words, Medupi is late, but they're still going to get the money, you see. So we need then, therefore, to be able to look at how do we regulate in order to make sure that we get the the correct value. Because what we're saying to the IPPs, we're not going to pay you anything until you get the first megawatt. So we need to do the same thing to ESCOM. Okay. So basically, I think it's a way that we regulate that needs to change quite radically. So we're engaging NERSA in this regard to say, how do we ensure that we regulate in a manner that is going to reflect the cost at the time when the consumer get the service? Okay, so and then on the issue Honorable Ross, you are absolutely right. We need to relook at the methodology of ensuring that how we regulate. And on the issue of the distribution electricity distribution and the 32 billion, what my colleague in National Treasury has indicated is that it's not going to be one big lump sum at one go. What he has indicated to us is that he wants us to break this down over, say, the next 5 years or so, to say how are we going to make sure that we look at the rehabilitation of infrastructure. So what I can indicate to you, Honorable Chairperson, is that at the moment there is a discussion with Treasury and there is sympathy that we need to have the rehabilitation of infrastructure to be attended to, because it has got great impact going forward. So I'm going to leave that to some of my colleagues. And then, Honorable Khreling, definitely we're very worried also about the stranded assets. It doesn't matter whether it's nuclear or whatever it is, we're very worried about that, because the way it happens, Chairperson, is that when the pricing start increasing, certain businesses that were based on cheap electricity start closing down. And then the pricing comes down, the demand comes down. However, because we still need to pay for that generation that we had planned that we are going to meet it with this demand, we still have got to pay anyway. And what it means then, therefore, is that we are going to be utilizing a smaller port to pay for something that is big. So basically, we're going to end up having high electricity pricing. So that's why we are saying that we cannot regulate like the way we have been. We have to make sure that we are regulating in a manner that is going to be favorable. We have reached a tipping point in terms of the electricity pricing. We've reached a point now where we're beginning to see the closing down of smelters, where we're seeing some of the energy intensive activity are being abandoned. It might not necessarily be a bad thing in terms of energy intensity and the reduction of the carbon footprint, but it has got the consequence that we're going to end up having to service a lot of generation while the demand comes down quite significantly. Hence, therefore, that's why also we need, Chairperson, to keep on revising our plans to make sure that we are not having these runaway prices, because we have planned for large generation. If I can just indicate to you, Chairperson, our plan, our IRP, is based on 4.5% for the next 20 years. Already we know this year that is not achievable. So therefore we need them to be able to go back and say, how do we then scale back some of the generation that we have planned to make sure that we put back a pedal on the pricing for electricity.
I trust ESCOM will take a couple of minutes at some stage to tell us about the veracity of this company that's jumping ship to China. Okay, carry on.
Okay, but Chair, I can assure you it is happening. That is, we do have that also, that information we have received from the relevant company. And Honorable Dexter, thank you for the compliment. And obviously the issues of the energy sector are quite complex, and we do appreciate that probably we need those kind of radical terms like mediocrity maybe to up our game. And then Honorable Mdao, on the issue of I think the big issue there that I am going to request my colleague to deal with is around the LPG issue. And I agree with you, an unqualified report is expected. But definitely when it comes to the returning money to Treasury, it's not a desirable outcome for anybody else. But what we are saying now to our colleagues in Treasury, because I don't want to preempt our discussions, because we are having quite serious discussions at high level, it is our considered view that there is an appreciation now of the need of this department. There is an appreciation that this department has got to be capacitated accordingly. In fact, they observed that when they had to assist us with the IPP procurement, because then they started beginning to realize the amount of work that is involved. So hence, therefore, there is that kind of an appreciation. I'm not ready to give up yet to say they are not going to say yes. Let's just indicate to you, Chairperson, that we are putting our case forward to National Treasury, and should we have any serious challenges, then we will approach this committee for assistance. And okay, Honorable Chair, again, thank you for the compliment. I will deal with the issue of the energy efficiency campaign. The energy efficiency campaign, I agree with you, has been sporadic. But what we have done now is that we have taken this matter to NEDLAC, because the social partners have indicated that they want a campaign that they're going to buy into it. They want a campaign that they're going to be part of it. 49M is not, it's not enough. So we need to make sure that we go beyond 49M. One of the discussions the minister is having today, as she's not here because she's with NEDLAC, is to be able to finalize this campaign, because the argument at NEDLAC is that you cannot have an energy efficiency campaign outside a finalized energy efficiency strategy. So we need then, therefore, to make sure then that these two are finalized together, so that we can then start rolling a campaign that is got a buy-in of everybody else. And in terms of the transition to low carbon economy, Chair, we are participants there. In fact, as you probably are aware, we have been invited a number of times even to make presentations at the panel. Chairperson, let me leave it at that and then just request my colleagues just to add on.
Thank you very much, DG. Just to add to the issues that have been raised around the LPG, I think we have a very serious situation on LPG countrywide. And as DG indicated, it's about reliability of refineries. That's the first issue. Our refineries are not reliable. The unplanned shutdowns of the various units within the refineries is increasing, and increasing at an alarming rate. And I think that is an issue. And so the talk of not building a new refinery, I think people have got to really reconsider. Because it's clear to us that there is a need for new refining capacity in the country at the rate at which things are going. We had a
tough challenge even as recent as this week. And in fact, the issue of the LPG currently is because the Moss Gas facility is on an unplanned shutdown, and some of the other refineries were late at coming back from scheduled shutdowns, and we also have the fires and so on in some of the other refineries, like we had at Engen on Monday. The second issue on the LPG is port infrastructure for imports, which is not within the control of the Department of Energy. I think there is a need to accelerate the issues of the port strategy, particularly with regards to designating areas for imports of port infrastructure. And to this end, I believe that the department has done the necessary consultations. The DG has been in constant contact with the Transnet authorities in this regard. I believe that there is a third issue. And the third issue is the deregulation of the refining sector, as called for in the white paper. What this means is that the crude oil diet that is used in these refineries, basically the oil companies can decide what crude they process and what products they are going to maximize. And if LPG for them is not, you know, bringing them more returns than petrol, then they basically maximize on the production of petrol. We are facing those challenges currently. However, we've then said we need to look at giving a signal from the regulatory side. But of course, that signal is going to come at a price, because now we are forced into a situation where we might have to incentivize the production of LPG until such time as the port infrastructure catches up, as well as we get better reliability from the refineries. It is a major issue, and it is of major concern to us. I think we feel it, and it's going against our strategy, particularly in some of the townships. It actually was gaining ground, LPG. Now, the fact that it's not available means that people now have got to find other alternative means, which may be even more costly for them. Just to touch on the issue of the strategic stocks policy, I think I need to indicate that, firstly, we are in the southern tip of the continent. The norm in for example, OECD countries is to have 3 months of strategic stocks of crude, and in addition you have petroleum products, emergency stocks. Now, what happened in our country is that even though we have Saldana, we decided at some point that perhaps we don't need as much crude as we had at the time, and of course the crude was sold, and basically the cover that we have for crude oil is not at a level that gives us comfort, because we need to be looking at what would happen, like what happened in North Africa and the Middle East,
if that were to begin to affect, supply, then I think we would have a difficult situation. I think it's common knowledge that basically we don't have cover for crude oil beyond a month. I mean that is the situation. So we are looking at actually beefing up that. Also taking into account that recently the pirates, their operation in our, in the continent, also could have an impact on vessels that are supposed to bring crude oil to the country. The second issue on strategic stocks is that we also, apart from crude oil, we need petroleum products, emergency stocks. And this is something that we are not strong in currently. So if you have a situation where you have unreliable refineries not being able to produce, then you sit and run out very, very quickly. And this is the situation that basically we find ourselves in today. I mean, just an issue of weather, adverse weather in Durban, could have a major impact on petroleum products going forward. So you need to cover for those things, especially with climate change. You actually are beginning to experience weather patterns that are having an impact on the imports of products. On the biofuels and the clean fuels link, perhaps I just need to explain that even though they are linked, biofuels and clean fuels too, we need to just separate them in the sense that the clean fuels too, the focus really is on the reduction of sulfur in the benzenes and so on in the petroleum products that come from fossil fuels, as it were. So that is the focus of the Clean Fuels 2 program. Now, on the biofuels draft regulation that has been published, basically we are giving a regulatory signal to potential biofuels manufacturers that they can then start planning to build their facilities, but also giving a signal to those who will be producing the feedstock that the time for biofuels in the country has come, and we are looking at actually the creation of jobs in the production of the feedstock. And unlike the rest of the Clean Fuels 2 program, once that regulation is finalized, we will actually be looking at a date of implementation which will be much earlier than the 2017. And in fact, we've already received feedback from the potential manufacturers that they have enough of a signal now to start planning the production facilities. It's a pity Honorable Dexter is not in the room, but I was going to say that sometimes, Honorable Members, people do come to the various fora and they are seen as experts. And some of the information, I think we need to just guard that we are not being fed anecdotal information. The South African energy system is complex. It's interrelated. You cannot just import something from Europe or some other part of the world and expect that you can just impose it on this system. It's a complex system, and even some of the organizations that appear to have the necessary skills, they are actually making use of more of consultants having in-house the kinds of people who have the understanding. Just to give an example of this issue of capacity, we didn't talk about this, I don't know whether I'm going to get in trouble with the DG, but for 4 months of the last financial year, the person who was supposed to be responsible for the IEP was doing planning for the World Cup. Now, for planning for liquid fuels for the World Cup, and that was a successful event. We have not highlighted it, I guess, enough here, but it diverted the resources. And this has these kinds of impact, and I guess this is one of those unplanned achievements. But to have a successful World Cup, we needed to have somebody who understands the system to actually be the one. So there is then a knock-on effect on the other areas. I guess I will leave it there, Chair. There is a lot I could have said. And I don't know if Mr. Pane wants to hold it.
Chair, through you, just a few quick questions. I think the one about the distribution infrastructure rehabilitation and the coherent vision. I thought DG touched a little bit on that. The complexities, well, perhaps a comment first, that the fiscal, what the Finance and Fiscal Commission's proposal to inject the once-off thing perhaps needs to be seen in another context, that it's not so much that you want to fix the problem, it's the fact that you want a sustainable solution. You know, that 5 years down the line, you don't end up in the same problem all over again. And that's not a money issue. It's a regulatory, an institutional, you know, it's a very complex issue. And I think DC did allude to it, that if you don't have alignment of those, shall we say, objectives, you know, where on the one hand the municipality needs the revenue to survive, and you come with a plan that threatens that sustainability because there's no commitment elsewhere to close the gap, then we work against each other. But I think, Chair, also the constitutional dispensation around distribution of electricity is an additional. And I think you've heard about IPT, you know, that you have that particular problem, but you also have other problems that, you know, make coherence difficult yet necessary. And it's not like the coherence, you know, can happen at one point. It's not like the Department of Energy can provide the necessary coherence around matters of the fiscus or matters that relate to, you know, the municipality's own tariff, or shall we, well, not tariff, but a surcharge setting mandate, you know, and unless all of that talks together, you know, you can't put a finger on one, you know, entity in government and say that I think it's perhaps something that could even be coordinated at the highest level, maybe, you know, even your assistance, Chair, in that regard. So it's, I think DG has touched on a lot of those issues today. Maybe the other point was raised about whether we use the modern equivalent asset model. Yes, we do that. That's the proposal that ESCOM has put forward. And perhaps DG, with your permission, I think you mentioned it at some point that we needed to revisit some of those policies, you know, the pricing policy. Is one of those electricity pricing policy in the context of how you want to price it and not get out of your country competitiveness and affordability. Chair, maybe the last one,
the comment, and again, not so much to justify, but to also reinforce a problem and perhaps where we can get assistance. You know, we take money back to Treasury, in this case, some 50 million, 55 million on the non-grid, or from the non-grid electrification program. And to do justice to how it happens, you know, I think it's necessary so that you can understand, you know, maybe how it can we can be assisted. The non-grid electrification program, around 1999, we painted the whole Eastern Cape with solar home systems, and there was nobody to look after them. It was disastrous. So we had systems sitting all over the place with nobody to make sure that they were running and so on. And the analysis was that you've got to have somebody that is responsible for their life cycle management. If you don't have that, you know, it's a waste. With the solar home systems program that we have, is that the issue of maintenance is linked to what is called a fee for service. So in other words, a service provider has to, or rather, you cannot expect, you know, the poorest of the poor to pay 58 rand per month in order to keep up with the solar home systems, you know, sustainability. So what happens is that we link it with the municipality. So the condition for its rollout is that the municipality must make a commitment to allocate free basic electricity to support that particular program. Right, so you have two layers now. The one says we have the money, but you have to have a matching allocation and commitment of free basic, you know, electricity in order to be able to do that. And I think it just demonstrates some of this complexity. So it's not just the question that we have the money, go and roll these things out, because in 2 years' time there's nobody to look after it. So you have to then align all of those kind of issues. I think, Chair, we did allude to it earlier on. One of the problems is the flexibility in the way that the money is classified, because once you don't have that ability to take, you know, I think Honorable Mutau touched on it, it's not as simple as this money is, you know, at risk of not being spent, so take it from here and give it to somewhere else, because that process is not as flexible as that. In fact, I think we did indicate the last presentation we did here, that this year, the rollover approval was issued on the 23rd of September. Right, so this is funding that was at risk in or before March last year, and there's nothing that you can do about that until Treasury says, yeah, is a letter for your rollover. Well, it was oversight, but I think it just demonstrates some of those, you know, need. And did you, with your permission, I think perhaps this platform, I mean, you have the power to sometimes bring all of us together in order to, you know, to work together to resolve it as a department, sometimes with the regulator, with ESCOM, with the municipalities, and so on. I think, TJ, you did touch on the low carbon economy. The issue around, the two others, especially skills, and I think my colleague did touch on that somewhat. But maybe just to also indicate, Chair, that we're also looking outside of, you know, the it's got to such a point that you have to have the people now, and you can't wait until the resolution of this process. So what we're doing is now we, on an extraordinary kind of basis, we have, you know, donor agencies willing to provide, shall we say, funding in kind, not as in a physical, not as in real money, but, you know, in kind, you know, a support where we can procure warm bodies and build our capacity that way. And those experts would be, shall we say, that the remuneration would be covered, you know, by those kind of things. Because it's a South African problem. It's not a DOE problem only. It's a South African problem. The issue of skills, generally technical skills, but even more, bringing those skills into the public service is also a serious problem. Chair, the very last point, the solar water heating, I think, let's see about that. I think it's a very nice challenge. There is some concern that we might not be, but I think we like the challenge. It's something that we think we would like to
show that it can be done and achieve it. Thanks.
Chairperson,
under administration, the chairperson did indicate that we have not made a presentation in as far as, you know, our planned achievements, and, you know, and we have not even indicated those areas where we haven't achieved in terms of our plans. But the chairperson, we didn't give this presentation because there was an assumption that maybe, you know, if you look on page 36 of the annual report, you know, our plan for the fiscal year under review is clearly outlined there, and it clearly indicates, you know, what the target was in terms of service delivery, and what we have not achieved, and we have also indicated the reasons for the variance. But in the main, you realize that it is mainly due to capacity constraints, you know, as a result of lack of funding. In as far as the training program is concerned and what the target was, Chairperson, we had intended to train 526 employees, but because of lack of funding, we could only train 50% of, you know, of our employees in line with our workplace skills plan. Chair, you realize that most of our work in administration is process-driven, and it is informed by the management framework as contained in the regulatory framework that is given to us by the Department of Public Service and Administration. First, you have, you know, a strat plan. Then, after having identified the strategic priorities, then you say, having identified this as priorities, what kind of resources do I need? And in particular, in this case, HR resources. Because then you develop an HR plan. The HR plan must be linked to your strat plan in line with the MTEF allocations. But if funding does not allow you to staff the department accordingly, then you have to revert back to the interim structure like we've done, you know, in the new Department of Energy. We do have an approved plan, which really I would like to commit to forward to the Secretariat of the PPC for information of the honorable members, so that the members can see as to how do we plan to capacitate our department going forward. But this is also dependent on the availability of funding. This is a very big challenge for us. And if we don't get the necessary funding, Chairperson, like it has happened in the past, we will not be in a position to implement fully our HR plan. We'll also forward, you know, a copy of the energy efficiency campaign strategy. And in as far as the vacancy rate, you know, of 7% that I've alluded to, which in my presentation, it was referring to the vacancy rate at the moment. Yes, in as far as the funded vacancies on the interim structure is concerned. And in total, we are saying the number of vacancies that we have on the interim structure in relation to funded vacancies, it's 38 posts. Yeah, I think, I have done a justice to all the questions. Yeah, the question in relation to how do we plan to resource our structure, Jefferson, I have indicated that I'll circulate, you know, a well-documented HR plan, which we normally and are required to submit to National Treasury together with our request for, you know, the MTF allocations, you know. We've submitted that as one of the options to National Treasury. So thank you, Chairperson.
Sure, just as a follow-up, I mean, just on the issue of the electricity distribution, I mean, I'm fully aware of the problems that you've listed, and I'm fully aware of the complexities around this issue and the fact that the Department of Energy cannot alone handle all of these issues themselves. What I'm saying is that we really need to urgently tackle this issue as a country, and we need to elevate it to a higher level. And I'm saying, who is going to take responsibility for this at that higher level, if it is not solely the Department of Energy? Are they going to form an inter-cabinet task team, for instance? What are the procedures in terms of dealing with the complexities that span across various departments to deal with this? Because I'm just not seeing enough urgency in terms of tackling this. As you say, a once-off payment is not going to solve the institutional crisis that we face with this. So what is the plan in terms of trying to elevate this to a higher level and deal with it on that level? Thanks.
Just in regard to pricing, something that we need to take note of is also the ISMO bill, the independent structure within ESCOM, and what role can they play in terms of perhaps moving pricing into the ease of demand and supply mode, free market mode. And I'm not quite sure, you know, what the role of the regulator will be and what will the role of the ISMO be, but I think we need a whole workshop on this. See how that will pan out in terms of pricing, and that could perhaps that would be the solution, where we find that this independent organization will take it away from ESCOM in terms of saying this is what we need for our build programs, and that it's simply going to be on demand and supply. I'm not sure, but the ISMO bill will open some venues there, and I think we have to look at that as well.
Chair, just to conclude from my part, that's where I started. We have talked about capacity, guys. Right now, we know what needs to be done. It has to be done. I'm arming you. If you go into those discussions with Cabinet, make one statement. If this department fails, the lights go out, the country comes to a standstill. It's very simple. The other point I want to make is this, and it's credit to all of you sitting here. We had a briefing yesterday with the AG's people, and I must say, many times we hear bad things about other portfolio committees, the people there, subterfuge, not being honest, not whatever. I don't want you to walk away from here not knowing what we knew. We knew exactly what you guys were going to tell us. We interrogated this document yesterday. We asked the questions. Some they couldn't answer clearly because they don't know. And we said we would ask you. And I would like to thank you very, very much for being honest and candid with us. Thank you very much.
And the chair concurs.
Perhaps the question about the distribution problem, just to indicate that, you know, we mustn't come across as if it's, you know, completely ownerless is a process. There are institutional arrangements in place, including the infrastructure commission that has been set up under the chairmanship of the president himself, and it brings the three, you know, spheres of government together from an institutional, shall we say, coordination perspective. And one of the, or rather, some of the issues that are being discussed there are not just, you know, the, shall we say, the capital programs, but how the institutional relationships sometimes work for or impede you know, service delivery, and we think that that is an adequate, or rather the appropriate platform to launch this thing. But over and above that, I think I already indicated there is some, you know, proposal that is going through the cabinet system in order to kickstart these issues. Thanks. Yeah, that was the comment on ISMO. I think we noted, and maybe we can do that. But I believe that there would be a process here at the portfolio committee with the ISMO, and we can.
Honorable Ross, I'm just checking. I do not know who's frustrating us on this movie. I'm breathing on everyone's necks. I'm honestly breathing on everyone's neck. I mean, Petiji can tell you. I know when she sees me, the first thing she'll know, amongst other things, is that I want to know what's happening to the ISMO bid. Because informally, it's inside Parliament. But as you know, we can't touch it until it is formally registered, which is certified, and tagged, and all of those things. You can get a copy. We can discuss it. You can do anything for hours, for days, but we can't touch it formally, as you would know, you know, in terms of the conventional legislative processing. That's where things are. We're all eager. Maybe as an innovation, let's make sure that we use the period to empower ourselves, because it's just a 20-page document, but it is a very powerful piece of legislation. Its impact, you know, goes far beyond just as some can imagine. And it has interest, you know, because amongst other things, when we had, when there was this wind energy conference recently, someone from, I think it's a vice president, if actually not president of the International Renewable Energy Council, asked about it. So you can imagine, you know, when its interest goes as far as that, you know. So we will definitely will be working on it, you know, in various ways. And we were supposed to get another briefing, you know, or we were planning another briefing, more elaborate, obviously, from the department, which case would be, you know, including other expertise as well, you know, just to ensure that the committee at least is well versed about it before we process it. I just trust and hope the ministers' meeting today brings some clarity and a conclusive direction on this, because amongst other things, what I've picked up is that at Netflix, she's going to handle this matter as well. So at least, honorable members, let's hope that it'll be clear, you know, by next week on the matter. Yeah, input? Yeah. I don't know. At the end of the day, the input that we are getting will give us ammunition for us to go to the budget review report and make recommendations and draw conclusions. And honourable members, I want us to be quite upfront and clear that the department must understand the way the guidelines you know, are formulated, we have to express our position, whether we love them or not, whether we are satisfied or not of the performance. As a result, we will tend to be probing, turning every stone and all of that. Why I'm saying so, I'm looking at the B budget review report, let me just say, of last year. And there are a couple of things that any scholar does on. In terms of the clean energy program, you are supposed to be updating us on that one. Now, I'll speak with caution because I'm not sure whether that was done before I came. That's just one area I picked up in that report. And let's come to now. Ms. Mukwela, I must express my appreciation of all what you tried to do when it comes to NMPCC. But as you said yourself, you conduct oversight. That's the word we're using on the NMPCC. And all we're seeing now is delays. Now the question is, to what extent are you going to conduct oversight and you get delays? Because that will definitely have an impact on the security of the fuel stocks we're talking about. It's an area that, from my side, much as we have tried to explain, but I strongly maintain you just need to tighten that. You know, you have a leverage because the funds come from the department. I mean, that I can say anyway and anyhow. Not on anyway. Anyway. The public participation program would have loved from our side if we could have had more about stakeholder engagement. One of the most important things around public participation program is that it's a platform that would strengthen things like energy efficiency. Because energy efficiency can never be done by the department on its own. It's done out there. In fact, as I always say, you strengthen energy efficiency conduct just to parliamentarians here and the staff here. They stay somewhere at home. Immediately, they're influencing the family and the neighborhood. Whether you do it the other way around, you know, at home, through television and things, and they will transfer that if they buy into it at their workplaces, you know. The story goes on. How I would have loved to have had some more of that. The other areas is legislation. At some stage when we're doing planning for our programs, we had a list of legislation. In fact, that's when I interacted with the DG. My uneasiness there is that in your very report you're showing that because for whatever reason, you know, some of the legislation has not come through to Parliament and got processed. It is having, you know, a negative impact, you know, down the line. Sometimes you need to do legislation because there's a need, but my sense from what you're saying is that the legislation that you had the intention of introducing was quite crucial and at times urgent. So, honourable members, not only should the department be seized with that, but also from our side, we need to be probing a little bit more, even in future, that how do we unblock if there are blockages. One can understand maybe with one the petroleum amendment, because it needs the liquid fuels charter to be done. But there are others which I really would be keen to get a convincing reason why they are not, you know, forthcoming into the system. Not that I would like the committee to be seen doing legislation. It's quite a pressure situation when you start handling legislation. The international arena, we haven't heard anything. Even if it's in the document, it is to share with us today, the summary form, the state-owned enterprise. Amongst other things, you work through the state-owned enterprises or the entities, much as you handle a lot of legislative work. Anyway, we are tapering to the end now. I just wanted to highlight those. I'm highlighting them in view of the budget review cycle. Honourable members, I hope Honourable Kreling, you might not have it. I'm sure the community secretary will share with you the budget reviews user guide, because what it shows is that what we are doing now is actually phase 5, we're at the tail end. And the way you were portraying yourself is as if you're studying now, whereas it's tail end. So from next month, November, we actually, no matter how much pressure is there for the ISPO bill and climate change, COP17, we need just to give some little bit of time to start phase 1. Trigger it so that even our planning for next year, we integrate the whole thing. Then we'll be able to say at phase 5 in October next year, we're looking at cumulatively, the end point of our series of activities that we would have done all throughout the year. As a parting shot, amongst other things that one is beginning to sense is that much as we're conducting oversight on the committee, on the department today, but it's essential that as a committee also not just get seized, but we explore ways and means of making a contribution to some of the challenges that seem to be just perpetuating like a revolving door. You know, the infrastructure rehabilitation, how many times have we been exposed now? You know, SALCA came, the select committee in NCOP confirmed it, you know. The post-REVS era, but of course, the much as we take the point that the cabinet is doing it, but I'm sure from our side we'd like to be convinced that there's collaboration. Honestly and frankly, when it comes to the executive, not that we don't do it on our side, we cannot claim that the silo syndrome, you know, is gone and buried. And to quite an extent, that then hampers progress at times. Let's be frank and open. You see, people stick to their silos, you come, you put pressure on the department, they try their level best, whereas when they go to try and work with their colleagues, they hit the wall, or they themselves start, you know, getting entrapped in that silo syndrome, right? We don't know. You work on your own. But we need to be, you know, innovative to ensure that we break that silo syndrome, because at the end of the day, all what we want is that municipalities, you know, must be integrated in the distribution and probably transmission. I speak with caution on that, but distribution at least of electricity, you know, in a very meaningful way. You know, your business models, your funding models, you know, the skills, the revamped regulatory, you know, environment, and all of that, you know. It's just quite a package, which I hope, amongst other things, honorable members, next year, we will definitely have to have some kind of a mini endeavor on it. Because we've been handling it, but to what extent have you actually created a comprehensive picture of exactly what animal is it, you know, and do we understand who is doing what? Amongst other things, that's what the Financial and Fiscal Commission raised with us, that amongst other reasons why this backlog balloon from $5 billion rands in 2007 to almost 30
32 billion now is because Solomon Kombelis so like when you vigil is so like you know nobody is taking responsibility. It's still not clear in terms of the what you call etiquette good shares and the conditional grants, because others are saying that they have shown national who are providing money and the municipalities are giving different stories about how they use the money. And of course, the ease of responsibility comes. So that's one good example that honorable members, some firmness from our side must come. If it means in collaboration with other portfolio committees, yes, because we comprise, you know, in totality the parliament. I did deliberately ask the DG to rehash the challenges in service delivery and organizational environment. I hope in future one of the things we'll keep on checking is the impact, precisely now, not in general terms, of those challenges. But not only that, we need to check whether there is adequacy in response as well as remedial action from the department side. Whether there is adequacy in response and remedial action on the other side. One of the things that came out very, very strongly from DPME, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, is that in their contribution, what they would like to see, I think AG to an extent, is that departments start improving from spending a lot of time and investment on internal systems and procedures and start having more and more space in doing actual service delivery. It's a subtle hindrance. It's necessary because as a department, you've got to have proper systems, well-trained people, practices, build an organizational culture, and all of that. But at the same time, we're expecting you to deliver. It may start at some stage, but I'm sure we'll be monitoring that. Look, there'll be a shift, and we'll be seeing a department that delivers more and more and more. But at this stage in time, let me thank everyone for now, and all I can say, should there be any other information you would need over and above the volumes that you've given us, we'll quickly get in touch with the department, because we have to ensure that our budget review report is concluded next week or that other week, I'm not sure, but definitely within October for tabling to the National Assembly. Thank you very much for now. For those who will be resting, let's have a nice, enjoyable weekend. For those who will be working devils, let's pray for them. Bye, Dankie.